Rhodes. It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It's Friday. Now, we had a mistake. We're on live. You know, yesterday was a recorded show. And we sent it. We have a rerun Monday. I get to play grandbaby. And so we just asked that, you know, they run yesterday's Monday, and it got into the system, and I get in here and start, and I start hearing myself, and oops. So anyway, so that was yesterday's show that will rerun on Monday because it had Moray King in the second and third hour and Robert Fernandez on the lemonade stand in the first hour. But today we have 700 beehives. Dee Lusby lives in Tucson, and it's beesource.com. You go to Facebook and call Beesource, and Greg Tibnan, our farmer friend in Missouri, found her and said, look, man, you got to get this woman on. You want to do bees and learn all about bees and have some bees, which we're looking to do. You know, we sold the goats. You know, because they're eating all our crops. So really, the goat. I did. We hated to see them go. We became friends with them. You know, like them. They're really clever and smart and everything. But man, they are a pain in the butt. They will eat every. They always say goats eat everything. No, they just eat trees and tree bark and tree limbs and bushes and everything. Anything organic, man. They except grass. I mean, they'll eat some of the tips of the new shoots of grass and so on, but I got goats originally because we had a large property here. Let's get some goats. Have them eat the grass. They don't eat grass. They eat trees. And, you know, we should have got some sheep. And they have, you know, the kind of, you know, that don't molt, or you don't have to cut, and they have long hair sheep. So that would have been a better choice. And so anyway, but we did a couple years of goats. We learned a lot about goats. And I learned one thing, they'll produce a gallon and a half a day. These little goats. And I'm like, of milk. And I'm like, damn. So we never bred the girl. We were ready to. We didn't because we just were busy. Yeah, but we did go learn how to milk goats and learned all about goats, got the goat thing down. So we're going, okay. All right. So we're goated up. Let's get rid of them so we can grow some crops in our fields. So that's what we're doing. But... You know, we figured that, you know, to elevate the coolness factor, you know, the farm, that we need to, you know, growing a lot of stuff. You know, there's always a shortage of pollination and bees, and I like honey. And that's, you know, my Budwig that I do every day. You know, the only way I can stand it is, you know, to have a bunch of honey in it and some vanilla extract. We'll get to, you know, growing vanilla beans later. But we can do the honey thing. So we're going to go ahead and try to be a little self-sustaining on, you know, on the honey deal. So we're going to go ahead and talk to Dee Lusby before we do it. We have some other friends, people that we've met that we've done on the bee thing. And they're like, you know, it's really butt simple and, you know, it's not that big a deal. They do all the work. They work like bees. And there's another gentleman that we met at a party that owns a big company in New Mexico. And there's definitely something going on with the bee thing. They'll go out, and he said, where they make a lot of their money is they have, you know, a big contract with a big company. They do and provide a lot of stuff, and they invented a way of extracting the pollen from the bees. And I'm like, yeah, with tweezers, how the heck do you get the pollen off of the bees? They created a tray, like they have to go through a certain thing to get into the hive, and it just kind of scrapes the pollen off their legs. It just falls into a tray. Done. Got it. Okay, well, that's one way of doing it. So they do that. Then there's a lot of the honey products they provide to different people, but when they go out to do pollination, they'll take trucks, and they'll have, you know, a couple of thousand hives. They just don't return. And they go, why? And he goes, I don't know. And it's getting more common. You know, they think a lot of things. I mean, environmental this, you know, the GMO crops kind of, you know, do something to them, disorient them. That's poison. The brains get intoxicated. What something? What they don't know. You know, they got all kinds of theories and things that they're working on. They just pretty much put it into the cost of doing business. They go, yep. And what all corporations, companies do? Yeah, pass it on to the consumer. So he doesn't want to talk. He had a bunch to say about it. And we were at a dinner. A friend of ours had a 50th birthday at the Arizona Biltmore. And it was just kind of a patio afternoon, little fireworks thing. It was a big shindig, 50th birthday for his wife. So he put on a show and, introduced everybody and so on. Bees! Hello, you're my new best friend. We're having dinner today. And so he just downloaded on, but he didn't want to come on air. And I go, come on the show. Man, this is all great stuff. He goes, heck no. Anytime you're a large company that's doing anything and you start screaming about anything other than climate change, you get in trouble. And he just, no, I know better. But I go, tell me the term. What is it that I need to look for? Colony collapse, I think is what it was. Bee colony collapse. And he goes, Google that. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. There was something else he said, too. I can't remember. But you start Googling that, and all of a sudden you start finding out all kinds of stuff about bees. So I go, okay. So maybe we can go ahead and get some firsthand knowledge of what we have, do something here. But hopefully it's the honey. When we went up to Jackalope, one of the guys, boyfriend of one of Alma's friends. He raises his own bees, and he has a little boy that, Alma watches sometimes, been over before, and he's, three. He's the cutest thing ever. He's just a cool kid. And so I knew him from his kid. It's the first time I had met him. Nice guy. Raises bees. And he goes, here's all natural bee, honey. And we got a bunch. I've been using it, and I love it. But, can I do this myself? I go, how do you get the honey? And he goes, like this. You pull the comb out. You take a knife. You slice off, or string or whatever. You slice off the wax cap on the end. Turn it over. Let it sit on a cookie sheet at an angle and drain into the jar. I go, I don't know. Sounds like a lot of processing to me. It just drained it from the comb into the, okay, I can do that. So this is, I remember, how much time I got this segment? Okay, I did a speech in high school, and it was on, I think I did mine on the metric system. And I remember there was another, which is, damn, man, why are we not met? Anyway, there was another guy that gave a presentation on how many rat hairs are in your hot dog and so on. He's trying to, scare you into, and there's this, and you're eating rat hair, time you in peanut butter rat hair, and that kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, I'm going, okay, what am I willing to do to get rid of all of that? I mean, what's the process? How much am I, am I going to get me some bee leg in my honey? I got a little bit of little wing here, what am I willing to go through to, have the perfect, can it be? Do we know that it is? I mean, what kind of filters or processing they got to go through to take out all the, I'm just like, the trade-off is if it comes straight out of the hive, the comb into my jar, I say that's a big W. We win.
The Shire Free Church offers a sanctuary to those seeking an escape from state churches.
The Shire Free Church is an interfaith, diverse group of people that may not share identical theological beliefs.
As a member in or minister of the Shire Free Church, you are a sovereign individual and may be the faith of your choice or hold no theological belief at all.
We don't claim to have all of the answers.
We are open to all peaceful people.
We want to learn from each other.
What unifies the Shire Free Church and its diverse members is peace,
love, and liberty. There are many paths to God, one for every individual.
The Shire Free Church does not define a specific path beyond those parameters that must be your foundation.
Peace as your way,
love as your guide,
and liberty as your light.
Learn more at church.shiresociety.com.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Yeah. It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence today. Bees, in the third hour, we're going to go ahead and do, 700 hives. Damn. They got a lot of little details here on different things. Anyway, her husband, I think she's a widow now. He is fourth generation beekeeper. And I think in some of the research here, it says it's just her. But there is going to be a lot of information that we get from this. We're going to find out and get introduced to Ms. Lesby. And this is, I'm really looking forward to this because I'm hoping that, the bee thing is not that big a deal. I don't need another big deal, And then, of course, a lot of people, a lot of times you got to break the inertia. And the big hurdle on bees is that bees have stingers. Oh, my God, a bee. So my grandkid, well, I tell you what happened. They had a beehive, something in the back got under the eave of my son Corsair and his wife Laura and our three grandkids that they have. And when she would actually call me, he's at work, and she would call me and say, "Oh, there's bee." So as grandpa and father-in-law, I'm like, "Okay, da-da-da, here I am to save the day," and I'm on my way. And they call, "Oh, never mind, Tucker got him, their dog." And there's like three or four bees, and he went to town. He's like, "Oh, bee," and I think they got him, and then the rest went out. But she freaked out so much that it had an impact on the kids. I mean, they're outside, and So, that transferred, to the grandkids. They see bugs, man. They freak. And I go, "Whoa, that was, I guess better not, you teach a lion cubs to be afraid of something. I don't know. So I'm like, okay. So having the bees may kind of lessen that a little bit. We're just going, look, man, there can be some good bees. There can be some good bugs. We can do this bee thing. So we'll do that. Hopefully that'll be a side benefit. And then, of course, hopefully they don't sting them or swarm them or have them. But I don't think that's really a problem or issue. As I was a kid growing up, before the big African bee scare and all that kind of stuff, we would go touring, beehives. I remember third and fifth grade, we were out walking around in the beehives and so on. Now, when they started messing with them, and doing the smoking thing, the guy would put on a hood, maybe some gloves, but I don't even remember putting on the suit. So we're going to see if we can kind of get some truth on this. And another thing that we will share with you. These are things that we all need to know. I am willing to do it. So that's what we're going to do. Also, today we get caught up on some things. We get, regular letters to the editor, comments, emails, stuff. And I want to share one with you on smart meters. This has been a big deal here in Arizona, and there's been some protests. We talked to some guys in Sedona, and they were like, "Oh, man, hell no." And so they've been following this through, and it's kind of it's not real lengthy, but it's a letter. Probably take me more than a segment to read it. But what I'm going to go ahead and do is I'm going to go ahead and read this guy's letter. And it's on the site. And there's another one on carbine, which is a new form of carbon, kind of like the carbon nanotubes and graphene. They got another structure, which I make, by the way, as far as as far as I know. I still got to get, a spectrometer, electron microscope kind of doing whatever. But it doesn't really matter for what I'm doing. I'm just looking for the increased surface area, which is what they address in this article. And this is sent to me by several listeners and readers on Freedom's Phoenix. They go, "Oh, Ernie, you want to make sure you..." I'm like, okay. I'm putting it up, man. I put it up. It's been up. So this is, people are paying attention. They're going, "Oh, man, if this isn't exactly what Ernie was talking about, and better." And I'm going, okay, so we'll talk about that. It's carbene, a new form of carbon that's stronger than graphene. Remember me telling you, you take a, like an atom thick, and you're putting the weight of an elephant on a pencil, and it doesn't go through kind of thing? It's stronger now. The upgraded version. The Shields Captain up coating of the spaceship, meteor protection against whatever superconductive electromagnetic shield force field, whatever t-shirt kind of stuff, you know, just got an upgrade and twice as strong. So this is, I keep telling you, man, I'm telling you, it's carbon. This is all the Roswell secret material they couldn't, you know, turn and get and do and everything, carbon. That was another thing we learned from Moray King yesterday, and something that I suspected, and, you know, you kind of, you know, wonder about this. And if you listen to the interview, we're going to replay it again Monday. Also, we have, God, I brought it over here somewhere. Anyway, Chicago. And Donna, can you hand me that card over there, please? On the we have a new affiliate that we're just going to, it's the first time I've done this to where I do a best of. We used to have on the local stations here, we'd have best ofs. And it was because they asked me to fill in a couple hours on the weekend to do whatever here, just do a best of the week and stuff that. But I don't usually do that unless I do a compilation for a rerun that I'm taking a day off with grandkids or something. And but we have an opportunity to go on, what is it, WCKG in Chicago. And it's a small station in Chicago, Terran Station there, that the general manager is Matt Dubell. And he knows some other people that we've had as guests. And he was at Freedom Fest in Vegas. And I guess he heard a lot about the show and Freedom's Phoenix and everything. They go, whoa, man, every time I turn around, I keep hearing about, you know, in radio and libertarians and Ernie, and it keeps coming, you know, can you come on, we'll test and do, and you can go up there with Mr. Jones and stuff. And I go, yeah, cool. I'll give you a 2-hour, you know, peace out. So the first one, they wanted to get it by mid-Thursday, so we missed last week, Saturday, because I, you know, didn't have time. But I said, we'll go ahead and do it for this week, and the first show will be Moray King. Now, he's zero-point energy kind of, you know, scientist of guy that's really a journalist. He goes around and evaluates all these different efforts and so on. And he understands, and he gave us an idea. You know, I need to make a note for me to call Brian and Mike to talk about Moray's conversation. I'm sure they probably listened to the show, but I need to talk to them. Because these guys, I've known them for over a year and a half, and they are big into this alternative, exotic energy kind of stuff. I, you know, got lightning in a bottle kind of thing. And Moray made a couple of, you know, points that I didn't really dwell on as much as I wanted to at the time, and because you're going off in a whole nother thing. But he was saying that the plasmoids that you create when you do, all right, let me put it this way, air, inert gases, you know, freaking anything, you put a big enough spark in it, you'll create a plasma, like a little ball lightning. And this is one thing that Tesla was always going on about. He's going, you know, ball lightning, man, ball lightning. You understand the plasma state of matter, and you just start to understand a whole bunch of stuff. So ball lightning and what they call it, transitional transmutation. Ball lightning and transmutation. What they're talking about is that you can change certain elements like nickel into copper, lead into gold. You know, if you can transmute, that's been the big alchemist thing. We're going to wave hands on lead and turn it into gold. But, you know, I did not know how much heavier gold was than lead. I mean, it is an enormously more I mean, it's by 20, 30% or 40. It was some ridiculous amount. I had no idea it was that much heavier, more dense. The only thing that's almost identical to gold and its density is tungsten. And that's why they take tungsten and they do a, is it tungsten? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's tungsten. They, not to be confused with titanium, which is really light like aluminum and so on. So tungsten. They take tungsten and they, let's say you take a gold bar shape mold and you put like a 16th of an inch or maybe you're really generous, an eighth of an inch or quarter of an inch or whatever of gold in the bottom. You put a tungsten brick in there that's just like a 16th of an inch smaller than the gold, and then you pour gold all over the whole other thing. Any testing, it's gold. Same density, same weight. It reads the surface as gold. It's only when you drill it and you see there's tungsten in the middle. You know what? It didn't transmute. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. Transmutation, ball lightning. I'm going to explain some stuff when we come back.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help.
Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with a chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Yeah, got to break free. You know, this uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. Well, we do a lot of that lie exposing thing, but we got some secrets we got to, you know, kind of share too. All right. Let's go ahead and look at, I'm going to talk about some of the things and explain, because I had to look up some stuff, you know. This is, we're talking to Maurice King yesterday. It was. I tell you what, the big deal, the best part is, you know, he was like, man, you got commercials all the time. What the heck? Welcome to commercial radio. Now, at the end of the show, we did another hour. Now, the MP3 of yesterday's show is up, and you go and you listen to the additional hour. We just got to yak it. And I got to express myself, you know, my whole thing, you know, about why I do this kind of stuff and the social impact and cultural impact of what we do and what he's discovering and how, you know, the internet. I mean, he's been doing this since the 70s. You know, all of a sudden, the internet changed freaking everything for everybody at every level. I saw last night, I had it in my Netflix queue, a 1995 interview with Steve Jobs. And it was like thought to be, you know, a lost interview. And it was done, I got the impression it was Oregon PBS. And they were talking to him just a month before, or less than a year. It was right before he sold Next to Apple. Now, a lot of people you may not remember is that he's 30 years old. Apple is kicking butt. You know, they got, you know, the Macintosh thing just, you know, it's launching and oh my goodness, and they're filthy, stinking rich. And so he brings on an operations man, you know, get somebody else and be CEO in here and this guy that used to work for and kind of a name and you do it. But he gets the board behind him and so on. And finally, you know, Steve, you know, you're not with the program, you hippie, and you're out. And, you know, he was like, you know, what the heck? You know, he's like, why? What? So there's a big, you know, bunch of drama and trauma there for him. But eventually he would come back as Apple was slid into, you know, the nothingville. And his whole thing was, you know, it's all about taste, culture. You know, it was, you know, remaining relevant and cool, you know, having the new, he goes, we were at least 5 years ahead of everyone, and that edge was just wasted. What he went on to do is Next, N-E-X-T. And I remember the Next computer was Steve Jobs. He'd do his big presentation thing. It was a cube, you know, and, it, you know, processing data, whatever. But his real thing that he saw, he said, everything's going to be software. So he came up with a language or an ability to be able to write software much more quickly. Instead of having this army of Microsoft stuff, he would have more of a kernel, a seed of kind of the open source Mac, kind of whatever the heck he knew how to do. So he did that, and eventually Apple finally just bought him out, gave him a gazillion dollars, and had him come back. And when he was the head guy until he died in 2011, I think it was. So that was a lot longer ago than I thought it was. So a couple of years ago, he passed, and he was really open. It was an hour and a half interview, just him sitting there being asked all these questions, given the history of how Apple came about and why and such. And a new movie coming out, Jobs, you know, that would be, you know, with Carsten Kirstner, or how you say his name, you know, plays Job. Looks a lot like him, too, so that, you know, that works out. So we're going to go ahead and kind of get that dramatized TV version of. And one of the common things that he addressed is that his management style. I mean, he was all, heck no, man, that work is crap, you know, faster, faster, more, better, you know, you don't need a family. And when you're really in the creative mode and you're building and you're on the edge and so on, that works until you just have a team that gets older and they're just like got a life. Now, can you sustain that kind of, you know, effort? Well, one, you want to get the best talent, which he talked about. But a lot of times you just got to keep hiring new talent, younger people coming in to do what. So we're going to find that out, I'm sure, in the movie. And then, of course, there was the book. So I think this is interesting. But the one thing that I wanted to share with you in this segment is when we talked with Maury King yesterday, it was clear that the internet has had a big impact on the sharing of this type of information. And that's one thing that Steve Jobs, in 1995, he said, you watch. He goes, look at the percentage of commerce. Is it like 15% or something is done in catalog? He goes, all of that and everything else is going to move to the web. So they were all about designing for web. He goes, you watch. It's all, here we go. Well, to get that experience and still have, you know, computing and all that kind of stuff, and but have the web in your hand, the iPad, okay? It's like in the iPhone, and also you got more and more mobile. And he was saying, we're going to be seeing computers not so much for computation, which was more like numbers and spreadsheets and all that. It's kind of like, you know, VisiCalc. I remember using an old model TRS-80 Tandy Model 4 kind of, you know, spreadsheet thing, which is very cool, by the way. It lets you do a lot of stuff, but you know, it made a lot of things easier. But he said it was desktop publishing. And then they bought a company and got a big percentage of Adobe, and they started doing printers. And their first printers were $7,000 in the 90s, you know, or late 80s or whatever, $7,000 for a laser printer. And they had the first laser printer, you know, back in the day. And they thought that was a lot until they started to realize how they networked them into an office. So you had one, the $7,000 printer that everybody got to use and you get and done and it's cool. And, you know, you just saved your whole bunch of secretaries typing. You ever watch Mad Men about, you know, Madison Avenue and advertising in the 60s as a TV show? I mean, two things. One, a bunch of secretaries typing and everybody smoking. I mean, you know, that was kind of the big thing I get out of it. And so when you have this computing power there, he goes, that's not what the internet and the computer is going to be remembered for. It's going to be remembered for communication. It's going to be remembered for linking everybody and everything. He goes, a small company can look exactly like or as big and badass as a big company on the web. When you do that, everything will change. You know what? Invest in a bunch in Blockbusters, are you? Tower Records, you know, a bunch of other, you know, unless it's food. I mean, I don't, hell, you get a lot of that from the internet, too. So this is, you know, Amazon, man, we're going to be funding Mr. Jeff Bezos's purchases of the Washington Post and going to space and all this other stuff. You know, he's been kind of clandestine on this thing, Blue Origin. You know, you just look it up, Blue Origin. Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon, lots of money going in the private space, you know, whatever heck he's doing. Because his whole thing is from the beginning, he wanted the vertical takeoff and landing ship. You know, he wants to go boom, go over, boom, down, done. There was a TV show that starred Andy Griffith, all right? The guy that played, what's Andy? It's Andy Griffith. Yeah, that's his name, right? The sheriff in Mayberry. You know, yeah, you know, Griffith. And what was his character's name? Sheriff, whatever, doesn't matter. So he played a inventor that came up with a kind of fuel that, you know, was inexpensive and cheap, and he had a vertical takeoff. And the pilot shows he went to the moon for scrap. He owned a scrapyard. And he went to the moon to go get a bunch of stuff to sell, and NASA's like, no, we'll pay you not to pick it up or something. Anyway, so I remember that his whole thing was is being able to fly anywhere he wanted in his rocket ship all over the world. And I'm going, that must have had an impact on Jeff Bezos, because that's the kind of ship that he's looking to do. He's not, you know, about fast. He's not about, you know, orbiting as much. He's not about, you know, the space plane kind of thing. He wants to go up and go and do and be around and on the Earth, I guess. That's kind of the impression that I get, and we'll find out more about it. Now, yeah, we're going to run out of time this hour. I got the next hour. I'll go ahead and do some of the science, and I'll set it up here, and we'll go over how the carbide works. We'll go over the transmutation of nickel into copper on the Rossi motor, these cold fusion reactors. Because what's happening is they have like 30% of the nickel turns into copper, this transmutation. How's that happen? Now we'll go over that a little bit. What does it mean? There's a nuclear reaction going on. That's where they get the heat from. It's not an explosive nuclear reaction, but it's enough of a reaction that you're creating enough heat without radioactivity, because you're transmuting something from one element to another by, you know, removing and adding protons and stuff. So I'm going, okay, that's very interesting. Lead to gold has always been. Maybe DARPA's been doing it for a while. You never know. And then, what about cutting metal using the plasma torches? That it's not heat that does it. It's a plasma that's just breaking the bonds of the atoms in the metal, and it just separates. I lay hands on it, and it separates. Something to think about.
If you can't listen to the Liberty Radio Network's internet streams, free satellite channel, or radio affiliates, no worries. You can listen to LRN.FM from any phone, anywhere. Add this number to your phone. 213-493-0309. It's a long-distance call, so make sure you're familiar with your phone's calling plan. The Liberty Radio Network listen lines are locked into our stream 24 hours a day. Call 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
John Bush here with your Liberty Beat for Thursday, August 15th, 2013. Gold opened today at $1,326, silver at $21.82, and Bitcoin is trading at $97.39. On Wednesday afternoon, Bradley Manning's defense rested after calling a number of witnesses, including Manning's Aunt Deborah and sister Casey. Manning himself gave a statement apologizing for hurting the United States and for unintended consequences of his actions. He also told Colonel Lind that he realized after having much self-reflection, he should have worked within the system to achieve change. For most of the afternoon, the defense attempted to portray Manning as idealistic and naive, at one point stating that he was stuck in post-adolescent idealism. The defense also detailed Manning's experience growing up with abusive alcoholic parents. The prosecution spent their time questioning Manning's empathy and painting him as unsympathetic to his fellow soldiers. Manning is currently facing life in military prison. Colonel Lynn is expected to rule on final sentencing early next week. Police accountability activists from all around the country are descending on Austin, Texas this week for the upcoming Peaceful Streets Project Police Accountability Summit this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the AT&T Executive Conference Center on UT campus. Among those scheduled to speak are Pete Ayer of CopBlock.org and Jacob Crawford of WeCopWatch.org, who are currently embarking on a police accountability tour that will take them all throughout the U.S. and even to South Africa. Their first stop, Austin, Texas. We caught up with Pete, who filled us in on the goal of the police accountability tour.
Right now there's existing cop watch groups in a lot of towns that aren't as much online, and there's a lot of cop block and peaceful streets groups springing up all over the place. And I think when people connect, when we can focus on our comparative advantages and, you know, we'll look out for each other, we can accomplish a lot. So I think it's very timely.
To learn more about their efforts or to support their journey, visit copblock.org/tour. This is the Liberty Beat for August 15th, 2013. Be sure to check out our new and improved website at thelibertybeat.com. On August 12th, the indigenous movement out of southern Mexico, known as the Zapatistas, launched a community-ran non-hierarchical school that is expected to enroll over 1,500 students. La Escuelita de Libertad, or Little School of Liberty, will focus on schooling as well as involving students in the daily life of the Zapatistas community. Students will live with the family in a rebel Zapatista community and cut wood, work in the cornfields, cook, and eat with their host families. According to Subcomandante Marcos, the official spokesman for the movement, the school will be an open place for learning. Marcos stated that liberty is to govern and to govern ourselves according to our ways, in our geography, and in this calendar. The Zapatistas are a movement of indigenous rebels throughout southern Mexico who first appeared in 1994, capturing six towns in Chiapas. They have spent the last two decades building community, focusing on autonomy, agriculture, and indigenous rights. On August 2nd, police in Arlington, Texas raided a sustainable farm in pursuit of marijuana plants and compost. According to Shelley Smith, owner of the Garden of Eden Sustainable Farms, two warrants were served on the farm, one for suspicion of marijuana plants and one for safety violations. The Arlington police handcuffed eight adults that were on the property and seized nearly 21,000 pounds of materials, including compost, wooden pallets, furniture, as well as 24 tires filled with stagnant water. No marijuana was found. Smith said the police destroyed or stole everything they need for a sustainable lifestyle. Sergeant Chris Cook said he believed the operation was handled with dignity, professionalism, and respect. You've been listening to The Liberty Beat. Remember to question everything and always live free.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Okay, this is what we're going to do. A lot of the stuff I wanted to talk to you about and explain and everything is there are a couple of the guys that went to the Tesla Tech Extraordinary Technology Conference with me, Mike Crosswhite and Brian Gallagher. I just texted them and I said, hey, give me a call if you're up. You know, so Mike called me and we're going to yak about some of the stuff. You listened to the show. You didn't listen to the final, the additional bonus hour that we had. And, excuse me. Oh, I had a sneeze. Okay. It's, you know, skip to the end. Okay. So he's going to call in a minute. So what we're going to go ahead and do is have a conversation. And I wanted to, there's something a little special that we're going to be doing. And I want to share it with you guys from the beginning. Because that's how I maintain my, you know, safety. Is just, we just really open about everything that we do. And I wanted to explain a couple of things before we get to that. The transmutation of going, how can you have cold fusion? You can't have fusion. You can't. You're getting extra anomalous energy spikes and anomalous this and anomaly. And we have anomalies we can't explain. We're not going to do it. And you don't get a grant for it because, you know, hell no. Department of Energy, Department of Research for Pentagon, the department doesn't approve the department. So, but what's going on is a nuclear reaction. That's where all this extra energy is coming from, because you're transmuting nickel into copper. And the energy that comes out of that, you know, different energy levels and so on, of doing matter from one to another, produces an enormous amount of energy. It's a E equal MC square thing. And you got a change in mass, you get a subsequent amount of energy going somewhere. So after a year of running this reaction that they have, the cold fusion in this Rossi engine, all of a sudden, this is that megawatt they're selling to private. And that's what, you know, Moray King was saying. He goes, you don't want to talk to the inventor, the sales guy. You want to talk to the customer, you know, who's been buying this over the last couple of years. Okay. So we're going to be working on that, trying to get, yeah, somebody bought it, a megawatt power. What does it do over a year? It goes from nickel to copper. Well, that's lead to gold stuff, you know? So I need, seriously, Donald's having a conversation with Mike. So what we're going to go ahead and do is we'll have more understanding of that, and I can go over it here and explain to you the math and all and kind of whatever, but, you know, that's boring. And what we'll go ahead and do is I also want to talk about that new form of carbon. What's he doing? Okay. His phone's on forward. He has to take it off so that we can, and it sounds better. And what? Okay, so Donna's dealing with it. All right. Yeah, so that gives me time to go over this. Following Bacardi Rossi, a Ni58, which is nickel-58 nucleus, produces a copper nucleus according to the reaction of blah, 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 blah. Okay. Starting from nickel 58, which is the more abundant isotope, we can obtain, as described in the two above processes, copper formation and successive decay in nickel, producing nickel 59, 60, 61, 62, because copper 63, which can be formed starting with nickel 62, is stable and does not decay into nickel 63. The chain stops at 62. Each process means more blah, 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 blah energy thing. So the thing is that the energy that they're getting in this cold fusion thing is not from the formation of anything other than a nuclear reaction that is transmuting from one element to another, creating an enormous amount of heat. And they didn't understand this. They're wondering, how does this happen? Now, the reason I bring this up is because this article that everybody kept sending me, called Carbine, a new form of carbon that's stronger than graphene, which is like amazing right there. So a new form of carbon, dubbed carbine, is stronger and stiffer than any known material. In fact, carbine is about 2 times stronger than graphene and carbon nanotubes, which until now were the strongest materials by some margin. Carbine has a long list of unusual and highly desirable properties that make it an interesting material for a wide range of applications, from nanoelectronic spintronic devices to hydrogen storage to higher density batteries. All right? This is exactly what I'm talking about and why we're doing it. And they give the same reasons for why we're doing this in our lab. All right, let me go ahead and bring Mike Crosswhite into this. Mike, I got you there. Wait a minute, let me push
the button. I'm here, Ernie.
Okay. Now, you did get to watch the interview I did with Moray King, and you got to meet and talk with him when we were at Tesla Tech. But what you didn't get is the hour conversation that we had after the show that I included in the MP3 on the archive. And in there, we were talking, and I think on the air we mentioned it a little bit too, we were talking about there are two kinds of engines that he is interested in. He does presentations on. He's interested in what guys are doing with different things. And there's a guy, Danielle Roberts, I think was his name, right?
Yes.
Now, Danielle, he had the idea of how the orbit of electrons around the nucleus was different. Instead of it orbiting kind of like a spaceship, it was more perpendicular, and its orbit went inside, you know, he considered protons kind of like a key ring. You know, I had like a donut in the middle, and they're going around the outside, and the electrons kind of circled around through the donut, and it kind of looked, like a slinky. In fact, he used these plastic slinkies and cut them in different pieces to demonstrate what he was talking about. And he would show, this is what it looks like in its solid form, liquid, gaseous, plasma state. And he was able to demonstrate that. And he was interested in the PAP engine. I'm going to have you explain what that is in a little bit. And that he, instead of using a piston, he wanted to use a turbine. Then Moray was talking about, hey, man, need to use the Tesla version of a turbine and how he had it designed and all this stuff. What I'm finding is all of this technology and all these ideas, just reinventing what was in Tesla's head, why they call this extraordinary technology Tesla tech, is that a lot of it hasn't been done. And it hasn't been done simply because you hadn't been able to marry the idea guys with some of the guys that just know how to freaking run a CNC machine. You know, you find the guy that knows how to, you know, make, you know, whiz-bang little gadget gizmo de la piece of metal like this, they put them together. And all of a sudden, here comes Danielle with the gentleman that was, you know, doing some advanced stuff on the PAP engine, goes in his shop, they make it, it works. Look, it here we go. Now, the thing is that since we are at such an early stage of this, and people are starting to share, and I can't find anyone else doing what I'm doing. This carbon nano, I am shocked at how rare this is. I'm like, all right, fine. We'll just go. We'll be first on there. I don't care. So what we'll go ahead and do is I want you to go ahead and explain to the audience the idea that you had of bringing some people together and us doing different projects. And then I want to talk about what Maury had to say in the bonus hour. Go ahead, Mike. What's your idea?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, what we were talking about doing was we built several of these devices. I think you mentioned the GEAT machine. That's a GEAT reactor, which you place on a combustion engine, and it builds the or it allows the plasmoids. After talking with Maury, I think he described it pretty well as plasmoids. Allows those to be made so you can run a motor off of virtually any fuel, and then Houdini motors and other devices
I got too close in the break. When we come back, more with Mike, we'll see if we can get him go at least another segment or two, and go ahead and explain his idea. You guys are on the edge of your seat, I know it, so you just wait right there and we'll get it when we come back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Clear your independence with me, Ernest Hancock. My friend Mike Crosswhite, you know, Brian Gallagher, I think he's up, you know, trying to get hold. We'll see if we can get in. We got to get our second line. I was fixing in here, banging, whatever, and I messed up the connection. Anyway, I get the second line in. We get both of my motivation to do today. Okay. This is, I want to read something to you, kind of understand what we're dealing with. Here it says, it's also important to note that, just like graphene, carbide is just one atom thick. This means that, for a given mass of carbine, its surface area is relatively massive. A single gram of graphene, for example, has a surface area of about 5 tennis courts. This could be very important in areas such as energy storage, batteries, supercapacitors, where the surface area of the electrode is directly proportional to the energy density of the device. And the aforementioned hydrogen storage sponge, too, the huge surface area of carbine could result in a lot of hydrogen being mopped up relative to the size of the device. Moving forward, then, carbide appears to have lots of desirable properties that warrant further investigation, some blah, 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 blah. So I want to emphasize how important this is. This is exactly what we've been doing and why. And I can only see with the microscope down to a certain amount of the sponge kind of, oh my, wow, there's a lot of surface area there. And you know, a factor of 10 or 100, you know, magnification from that, there's even more pores and so on for a little, nickel atoms to be able to plate when I plate into there. And if I get into transmutation and just heating water, it going from nickel to carbon with my blah, blah, you see my point? These are like the secret de la, oh, hell no. They don't want them to be doing that. So what am I doing? I'm telling you right now. So because I feel better. So this is what Mike has an idea of how we're going to start, you know, playing with this and some of the other stuff. We'll talk about the plasmoids and so on. So, Mike, go ahead and express your idea, what you want to accomplish.
Yeah, Ernie, yeah, the plasmoids, if we can generate those in the GEAT motor system, in the GEAT fuel reactor, then we can probably put those together with this PAP motor engine and create energy that use any fuel and yet run for with much more power than any gasoline motor can produce. It's my understanding that the plasma engines put out tremendous torque, even more than diesel fuel or diesel motors do. So,
explain what's going on with the Geat engine. Let's talk about, because we were talking about the PAP engine and the Geat engine. People have no idea what we're talking about. Now, I was suggesting, after talking with Morey, I'm going, you know, it seems like they should be combined because they're doing two totally different things. But what he was saying is, he going, look, I don't think people really understand where they're getting this anomalous energy spike. And because they can't explain it, academia is like, it doesn't exist. And they're going, look, man, it's on my bench doing it. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. And they're going, yeah, well, Mr. Layman, until you can do the math and explain what's happening, you know, it didn't happen. So I'm going, okay, so let's go ahead and talk about the Geat engine. You have one. What is it?
Yeah, I built one off the free internet plans. They're on, if you search for it, Geat engine plans, and it should come up, and you can see how it's built. But basically, what you have is you take the exhaust pipe from a regular gasoline motor, and inside that exhaust pipe, you put another pipe inside it. So you've got two pipes. Now, on the inner pipe, you put a steel rod in there. So now you got a steel rod inside the inner pipe surrounded by the exhaust pipe on the outside. And then you run the vapors from a bubbler. And the bubbler is what it sounds like. If you have, like, used motor oil or crude oil or whatever, and you make a device so that outside air comes into the bottom of this thing through little holes in the bottom, and as the air bubbles up through the crude oil or the used motor oil or whatever fuel you're using, it brings along some of that vapor from that fuel, like you would normally smell if you smelled crude oil. That's part of the vapors. You take those vapors and you send them through that inner pipe, and it goes around the outside of the metal rod, and that forces that vapor to run on the outside of the inside rod where it's very hot from the exhaust pipe. And what it does is it transmutates in there. It changes, it breaks down the carbon chains for, like gasoline and all the petrol and oil and stuff are carbon chains. They're very long carbon chains. And as that vapor goes through that tight space, it breaks all those carbon chains down to, and what we thought was creates a refiner, like you would refine crude oil into gasoline and all the other components. That's what has always been explained, is that these long chains carbons were being broken down into smaller elements in order, in other words, cracking it. Well, based on Morey King's discussion yesterday, what it sounds more likely is that these plasmoids are being created in that process.
Because in the process of heating it and going through into the intake, it's just imagine a intake fuel injector going into a cylinder as it's, coiled around your exhaust manifold on your car. All you're doing is just really heating it. But a lot of, the little secret is that rod is the tolerances inside that pipe, around that rod, is such that it changes the, it's called cavitation or something. It changes the way the molecules are and what you're talking about. But it was also the vapors of the water is being burned. And they're going, it's like, that's why you're getting so much extra mileage. Well, it must be it's burning the water or something. No. What Morey was saying is that what you're getting, you may have some, combustion in that way, but the real power is, and they keep emphasizing creating more changes in the hydrocarbon alignment, because that's not really what's going on. Where you're getting your extra energy from is from the plasma that you're creating, you know, in the spark field. And you go, now the PAP engine operates totally differently, but if you combine the two, we're going to run out of time. So what we're going to do, we'll go another segment, then we'll explain the PAP engine. Now, a year ago, or maybe not that long ago, we had Mike and Brian on talking about the PAP engine. There was, I saw it demonstrated there. You got this, like, ion Polestar Trek impulse engine, flame blue going, sitting there blazing away, and you put your hand in front of it, and it doesn't burn you. And I'm going, what the heck is that? We're going to find out how you marry the two.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
It's a nuclear thing. You know, as soon as we start understanding a lot of this stuff, man, big bad guys in trouble. Hell, we're probably in trouble. Okay, now what I'm looking for here, let's go ahead and take a look. This is a PAP engine. Now, it runs on plasma. I'm trying to get a good picture that kind of shows the, illustrates the effect. And it's really, instead of in the internal combustion part of, here's some, all right, this is probably a good display of it. Now, what we're looking at here is you can see a rotary has two opposing cylinders on both sides. The only difference is it's a closed system. There isn't an intake and exhaust. It's noble gas, you know, which is, you know, the inert gases like helium, you know, argon, neon, whatever. They put in the inert gases in there, and you'll see the head has a bunch of spark. They have like four spark plugs. They want to really zap the snot out of it. When they do, it creates this plasma. I mean, very bright white lightning. I mean, it's lightning in a bottle, literally. And they take that, but what happens is it expands. It'll push the piston, but then it just contracts right back into its gaseous state. So you're going, boom, expansion, contraction. In that contraction, it also, whatever heat it produced, it sucks back out. You know, so it just, it's kind of a, you know, inert closed system. Now, what they're talking about is taking that plasma that they're creating on this kind of engine and putting it in with the GEAT system, reactor. Now, this is the engine put together. Now, I want to go ahead and let's talk, because you know something about the PAP engine too, Mike. Go ahead and tell us how the PAP engine works and what your experience with that has been.
The PAP engine, Joseph PAP was the inventor, and this was in the late 80s that he invented this engine. He got together a group of engineers, and what he's using is some radioactive materials, and it's the type of radioactive material that illuminates your watch dial. So it's not really, it is radioactive, but it's not really harmful in small quantities. But anyway, he makes a little cup of this stuff and screws it into the head. It provides the free ions, because it's always giving off these particles that helps excite the noble gases. And then, so that's kind of raises the energy level of the gas in the cylinder. And as you correctly stated, Ernie, there is no input valve or output valve. It's a sealed system. You put into the cylinder, you put the noble gases, and there are different mixtures of noble gases in it, and it requires adjustment. But you put the noble gases in the cylinder between the head and the piston, and then this radioactive material is in there in the head as well. And then they use electrodes, and they send a high-voltage spike to that electrode. And between the nuclear radioactive material and the high-voltage plasma that's created, that the noble gases expand five times their current size. So so that five times expansion is what that force is, the expanding force is what pushes on the piston. And it as I was stating earlier, the forces that drive that are greater than the diesel motor, the diesel fuel when it expands. So,
well, that's one thing that they're talking, in each one of these, there's different configurations as I'm looking on here of how they do the head and the spark and what kind of gases and all that. Excuse me. But the main thing is that they, it's having an inert gas in a closed system that's being changed from its state of gas into plasma. And that very state is enormous increase in expansion. And it's all about this head. Now, I got a good graphic here of one of the versions of that. And what Morey was saying is that if you were to take and create this head on the top of the Geet engine that you already have, he believes that instead of them, you know, tuning for maximizing hydrogen production and think they're burning hydrogen, you would be maximizing the plasmoid creation, and you get way more compression and energy doing that, and you have kind of a nuclear reaction. And I'm going, okay. So, you know, this is everything, as these things have been done already. And it's just, you know, people have been playing with it. You guys have been playing with it, you know, and you invest and talk to people. And you got videos of these young kids, you know, making this. And they're going, ooh, look what we be doing. And I'm going, okay. So I saw a demonstration of a lot of this stuff up there. I'm going to go ahead and play a video here. Let me show some of this. And so I'm looking at, as just for play, you know, are you willing to, you know, put a kind of a PAP engine head on your Geet engine and all of a sudden change the planet?
Yeah. Hey, that's the thing that I like doing the most, is combining technologies to come up with something that is very unique.
Well, this is, you know, I was interested in what, because that's one thing when we, you know, talked to him, he was saying that, and I'm going to show this firing here. When we were talking to him at the event, he was saying that, he goes, you know, there is a misunderstanding of what these are, you know, good machinists, you know, they benchtop hobbyists, they're doing exactly what, you know, should be done, kind of in the garage and making what fur and going and getting. And he goes, you know, but I think they're misunderstanding what it is that they're creating, what they're doing. Now, what this gentleman, this one kid is here showing, is he's just putting electrical connections together on two bolts and creating an arc that is not just an electrical arc. It is creating a plasma because it's charging the air between the two electrodes. And I'm going, this is really fairly simple stuff, but it has an enormous impact when you can contain it and get a internal combustion push on something, because there's a wave, a shock wave, there's pressure there somewhere. And I'm going, he's going, yeah, it's not really expanding gas like a chemical reaction, like an explosion. It's an expansion of one state of matter into another, and then it goes right back. So it's just self-sustaining. I mean, you know, you don't have to keep fueling it. You just keep pulsing it. And the thing is, you go, okay, do I get more energy out of it than when I put it into it? How is that possible? Well, then we start finding out about transmutation. We're converting, you know, different elements into other elements. You get a big thing. And that was that guy, that was it, Joseph Newman, that had an engine. He was all over the news in the early 80s. And we had him on the show last year. And he was all about, yep, got it right here running. Everybody knows it runs. Rayovac was invested in doing kind of military industrial, took them, they're gone, and the government won't give me a patent and screw them. And I'm going, wow, what is it that is the secret? He told me, he goes, it's real simple. He goes, everybody is always saying that you're have to use the input of electricity to get, you know, he goes, I'm not even doing that. He was saying somehow he was capturing the energy from the itty-bitty little plasmoids, a spark that is created from the brushes on the motor. You know, when you see the sparks on a motor, now those little sparks, he goes, that is a nuclear reaction. He goes, it's a plasma. It's not electrical spark. There's plasma there. And he was capturing that energy in some way. He had a little nuclear reactor, but on a different level. I'm going, wow, man, is it that simple? Yeah. Grandkid, grandma's basement in Boston, ionic breeze and a toaster, and the energy problem goes away.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Cybersecurity has become just another political football in Washington politics. Every day, millions of people access the internet without ever checking in with one local authority. There's a highway safety agency attempting to patrol the net, starting with a Virginia State pilot. You don't need a driver's license to access the internet highway. Don't volunteer up for the Cross-Sector Digital Identity Initiative. When you renew your license, you have a choice. Message brought to you by 511campaign.org.
Now that you've found the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM, you may want to help expose others to our great programs. To assist you in doing so, you'll find resources at promote.lrn.fm, including details on how to get a free bumper sticker, quarter-page flyers you can print out and distribute, banners for your website, as well as files that will allow you to make your own custom banners and graphics. Visit promote.lrn.fm and help bring new listeners to the Liberty Radio Network. That's promote.lrn.fm.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Okay, right back. There's one more thing I wanted to make sure Mike was able to, you know, share with us before he has to go and got work one of these days. Okay, Mike, one of the other things here is you're telling us we're putting all this stuff up in the second hour of today's archive. Plasma Jet Ignition. PlasmaJetIgnition.com. Go there, and what am I seeing?
Let's see. What you're seeing, what's going on is it's Aaron Murakami. He's an inventor, and he's come up with a process of altering your regular vehicle. There's a capacitive discharge a system that you can buy off the shelf that helps your engine burn fuel better, and it's called capacitive discharge. And what he's done is taken that off-the-shelf system and married a couple of diodes with it and is able to produce a spark that at the spark plug that instead of being a quarter inch long and very skinny and very narrow to being a plasma flash that has you know, it's like an inch and a half long and a half inch wide flame front. And so instead of a little tiny spark, you got this flame. It's like a flamethrower in your engine. And so it burns a lot more of the fuel vapors, because the modern American engine is only like 30% efficient and 70% of your gas goes out your tailpipe. But anyway, by creating this system, he's been able to create plasma and probably these plasmoids, and it improves the fuel performance of your car.
Okay, now I'm looking at these kits for an 8-cylinder. You're going anywhere from $400 to $700, and you know, I'm going, okay, so I understand what he's doing here, except the GEAT engine is creating the ideal, hopefully, you know, I think what's happening is the cavitation, they're getting to be able to create a plasma pressure wave from the ignition, or creating the plasma from just about anything. You know, it's water. Right. I mean, you know, it's you know, that's one of the deals. Now, what he's doing is he's changing the spark plug. His whole concept is we're going to go ahead and really amp up the, I can show it here. Amp up from a 30 milliamp, you know, see, you got generic ignition coil. Your ignition coil on your car, it gives you a little spark. It's 60 watts at 15 milliamps. Now, the MSD ignition, what you were talking about, is kind of a, you know, extra uber-duber. It's 120 watts at 30 milliamps. So it's kind of like twice the goodie. Now, what he's doing with the plasma jet ignition is 50 watts at 200 plus amps, okay? So he's just like, man, we're going to get us some fire going, okay? Now, when he does that, at that increase in power, what you're really doing is you're turning, instead of it having a chemical combustion reaction, you're not only getting the chemical, you are also turning those gases and maybe even the exhaust gases in a nano moment into plasmoids, and you're getting extra uber goody. So right. I'm going, okay, I'm wondering what the increase in performance or mileage is on that. And you may be able to do it better with just not even have gasoline with a GEAT engine, and you got that water. Rod that creates a cavitation. You could be burning freaking pond scum for all we know.
Water,
yeah. Well, okay, all right. Along with our accessories, the plasma jet ignition can improve practically any engine's performance with plug-and-play installation in under 15 minutes. Because, see, I can see what it is. It's just a box. It's going from the coil and through the box that has, I guess, what you say, diodes that do what?
Capacitors in there. Yeah, what Murakami's invention is to use that off-the-shelf device, which has the capacitors in there. Basically, what's happening is your 12-volt battery is charging capacitors, and then when the engine fires, when the spark is created, it's dumping the regular spark in there plus these charged-up capacitors. The energy that's in those big capacitors also gets dumped. So you've got the high voltage from the spark system, and then you've got low voltage, high amperage from these capacitors. And the mixture gives you all the amperage going across that spark gap, and that creates the plasma.
Well, does he suggest a different kind of spark plug, or does he supply that, or you just regular spark plugs, and what does it do to the cylinder head? I mean, that's one thing that Moore was saying. He's going, yeah, you know, they're going to start finding out that these plasmas are going to start, you know, eating away at stuff. And I don't even think it's from the heat so much as it is the breaking of the bonds. And
right.
That's one thing, you know, a lot of times people, they got these plasma cutters and it just goes like butter right through metal and so on. And it may be, you know, that's really hot and this and that. So on. I don't think that's all that's happening. What's really happening is, in addition, I'm sure there's some heat, but it's they're finding out that it's just the changing of the bond between, what would it be like a hot knife through butter? I mean, it's not really, it's cutting, it's separating the bond, like physically. It's not through heat, because that's what melting is. When you melt and you do a blowtorch, you get it so hot that the chemical reaction breaks loose, it changes, it gets soft, it turns to a gas, whatever. What if you had a plasmoid that just separated the chemical bonds between the atoms or the atomic bonds, not even really chemical? So, you know, you said something about a concrete demonstration of that. What was that about?
Yeah, while we were at the conference there in Albuquerque, I talked to a guy named Mike Hingle. And he was describing a gas that's similar to Brown's gas, but different. And the difference is
now say what Brown's gas is. Brown's gas is just
It's hydrogen. It's the gas that's produced through electrolysis.
Yeah, you get you take hydrogen and oxygen, you know, H2O, and then you get
Brown's gas.
Well, it's HHO or something like that. Yeah, it's HH. So you get two hydrogen, one less. Anyway, it's just a different formulation to where you have hydrogen that you can burn, and you can take this Brown's gas. You put it in a balloon. You hit it with a light, and it just explodes. I mean, it does pop. Yeah. So I've seen that done. So okay, so they're making the Brown's gas and what?
Okay, so this new gas is called SG gas. And it has different properties than Brown's gas. Brown's gas cannot be compressed. If you try to compress Brown's gas, it will self-explode. With the SG gas, you can compress it up to 1,000 pounds per square inch. So they're clearly different gases. But what the SG gas is if you use that gas to create a torch and you torch concrete, with the SG gas, it will melt the concrete without breaking it. If you took a regular frame flame from a regular torch and you heated concrete, the concrete would explode because it's expanding at different rates and it's brittle, and so it would explode. But with the SG gas, it's dissolving the molecular bonds of the concrete instead of producing heat. And as you were mentioning earlier, it's dissolving the molecular bonds instead of doing that through heat. So
I find that is much more, I don't know, subtle, just more interesting that you're doing the, you're starting to understand matter more. I mean, you're taking and, doing a good job of understanding why a piece of material is solid. And if you can understand that and take a device, a plasmoid, anything, and just do the separation and break the bonds, it just opens up. It's like surgery. I can see where this goes, and I'm kind of surprised we're this far behind. I'm thinking that this is there's so much coming. As much as we have seen the speed at which technology has taken over on things like computing, the internet, heck, aquaponics, growing food, being able to do our own little lab, desktop kind of whatever, open source mentality, wiki, Silk Road, Bitcoin. I mean, it's just, everything. We just bypass the system. We're just going to have to do it ourselves, not wait for General Electric to do it. You know what I mean? I can see where this is going. And it's going to take guys like Brian Gallagher, Mike Crosswhite, and all of you to just do it. Why? Because we're not afraid. Well, try and be real open about it. Be less afraid, you know what I mean? We'll be back with bees in the next hour.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
Friday, August 16th, 2013. 1 ounce of silver is $22. 1 Bitcoin is $111. Peace News Now is brought to you by friends of WeUseCoins.com and by you, the listener. The military sentencing of heroic whistleblower Bradley Manning began yesterday, and much to the disappointment and confusion of his supporters, Bradley was profusely apologetic in his written statement. He said, quote, "First, Your Honor, I want to start off with an apology. I'm sorry that my actions hurt people. I'm sorry that they hurt the United States. At the time of my decisions, as you know, I was dealing with a lot of issues, issues that are ongoing and continuing to affect me. Although a considerable difficulty in my life, these issues are not an excuse for my actions." Manning is responsible for one of the largest disclosures of confidential or classified information in U.S. history when he released the video Collateral Murder, which features a U.S. Apache helicopter firing indiscriminately on innocent Reuters journalists for fun. While the operators of the death machine who murdered handfuls of innocent people have not been pursued for admonishment, Bradley was dragged into a military prison and tortured for 3 years and was found guilty late last month of charges including espionage, theft, and fraud for revealing their actions to the public. He faces up to 90 years in prison. Manning said he saw the unintended consequences of his actions. But when he made the decision to release the trove of government data, quote, "I believed I was going to help people, not hurt people." Looking back, Manning said he wondered why he thought he could be the one to change the world better than those above him with more information. In retrospect, he said he should have, quote, "worked more aggressively inside the system." Yeah, Brad, I'm sure you mean that. As if you really believed that those higher-ups in the military are just waiting for the right moment to investigate and prosecute themselves. It's unclear to me whether or not Bradley is saying these things in the hopes that he can save himself from a lifetime spent in prison, or whether he's visited Room 101. Jason Sorens invented the Free State Project over a decade ago in an academic paper theorizing a strategy for achieving real liberty in a single lifetime. Today, the Free State Project is a reality, boasting a community of over 1,000 movers and over 14,000 pledged participants. Those who pledge with the FSP commit to move to New Hampshire within 5 years of the FSP reaching its goal of 20,000 signers. Yesterday, Jason wrote on his blog that he and his family made the move this past Saturday. While your typical move-in can take days, he writes that it only took him 20 minutes, thanks due to the 59 people who greeted the family when they arrived at their new home. New movers to the Free State often enjoy this type of hospitality upon arrival, simply by posting a message board about the time and place of their move. No doubt Jason received an unprecedented level of support due to his connection to the project. Jason explains in his blog post that while the move did mean leaving behind financial security and some close friends, ultimately his move is self-interested, not sacrificial. Quote, "The things that really matter in life are family, friends, community, and a sense of purpose. Financial security is secondary. We're participating in a historic effort to create a society of free and responsible individuals, which would be an impossible dream almost anywhere else. If you're considering a move to New Hampshire, check out Keene. Keene is one of the most popular liberty destinations. The Keenevention, a 3-day convention in Keene focusing exclusively on New Hampshire-based activism, is happening this fall, November 1st to the 3rd. Fall is the prettiest time to visit New Hampshire. Your peaceful news anchor will be hosting a panel on civil disobedience. Get your feet wet by participating in Robin Hooding and other fun forms of liberty activism. Get tickets and plan your stay at Keenevention.info. That's Keenevention.info. Peace News Now is...
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. D. Lusby, am I saying that right?
Right.
Okay. What we're going to go ahead and do is we have some pictures up that I guess Donna got from your site. We're going to go ahead and have talk about how they can contact you and what you do and the history of until we have an, 40 minutes after all the editing. We have four about 10-minute segments, and then you get to tell your entire story, and my wife and I are ready. We have, you know, doing an aquaponics thing here. We live on like 2 acres in North Phoenix in an irrigated horse property kind of thing. And chickens and goats. We just got rid of the goats so we can plant some more field stuff because they'll eat everything. And but we're thinking of bringing on bees. So one of our listeners suggested that we talk to you and a friend of mine. So I'm going, okay, so let's go ahead and we're going to learn everything bee. Can you help us out?
No problem.
All right, well, that's what we're going to do. So I'm going to – I know nothing. Now, it's you and your husband or are
– Okay, what site did you say you went to?
See, bsource.com.
Okay, bsource.com is with Barry Berkey up in Chicago.
Oh, okay. All right, well, hold on. Here we go.
Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm here in Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, IA from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. So we're going to have Dee Lusby kind of explain everything to us and you know what site to go to for. We're going to learn everything about bees. Okay, now where we got contact or found out about her was from beesource.com, but that's a site in Chicago, I think. So we're going to find out, you know, everything we can. We're ask her a gazillion questions, but let's go ahead and talk to Dee right away. Dee, help us out. You know, how do we get the information from you about you, what you're doing here, and we want you to, you know, become our new best friend? How we do that?
Well, I've been doing this for well over 55 years. So if people just put in D.A. Lusby or Organic Beekeepers or Arizona Rangeland Honey with Googling it in, they'll pull up more information than they ever want to know.
There you go. Arizona Rangeland Honey, is that it?
Right.
Okay, Donna's doing that right now, Arizona Rangeland Honey.
But Dee Lusby or Lusby Apiaries or just Organic Beekeepers or Organic Beekeeping, I've got the biggest organic beekeepers list under Yahoo in the world right now.
There you go. We just missed it. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and get that all up on the archive today. This is because I think you were found by another site that was talking about you. We just want to make sure we get the direct link to you.
All right, well, the one that I use daily for question and answer is organicbeekeepers@yahoogroups.com.
Organic Beekeepers Yahoo Groups. Okay, Donna's going to put all that up. She'll have it up by the end of the segment, and certainly for the archive, because everybody wants to know. I tell you why I want to know, because you're in Arizona, okay? So I need, you know, this one thing, and I do juicing a lot, and I've been taking local pollen for a long. I had really bad allergies as a kid. They thought I had asthma, and you know, so we moved from Florida to Arizona. That's gonna help me out. You know, I just remember always I didn't let it bother me. I didn't get, you know, an inhaler and lay on the couch. I was asked, screw it. I just go out and suck it up. You know, and that's probably why it helped me a lot. But go out and play, and I just, you know, just always had kind of this chest thing. Well, I just blazed through it. But what happened was when we moved to Arizona, it was almost as bad here in Phoenix, man. It's just a freaking jungle anyway with all the irrigation. But in Tucson, it's a lot more xeriscaping. It's more desert. And a lot of people come when I go out camping or in the desert, I felt a lot better. And then, here as an adult, now I remember I was like late 80s, I'm going out in when the blossoms were in bloom for the orange orchards and everything. It was like I was walking into a cloud. I could feel it. And then I started doing bee pollen. I took bee pollen, locally produced bee pollen, added it to my diet. All my allergies went away. And I'm going right on. Have you heard that before?
Uh-huh.
Well, tell me why. What is it that's going on there? I mean, that's the biggest reason I want you to be my new friend. You know what I mean?
Okay, well, the honey and the pollen is especially, the pollen is what's been copied by the pharmaceuticals for all the different various vitamins that are on the market today for vitamin deficiencies.
So you're just better off just getting the bees.
Well, yeah, because the pollen's the real thing as long as it's clean.
Well, define dirty and clean pollen.
Clean is what the bees take when they're properly sized, from the small medicinal all the way to the largest that they can get into for plants, versus being taken, say, with migratory to a specific monocrop or something that has pesticides or chemicals put upon it that then breaches it because they can only gather just a small majority of what they need for their whole spectrum of life, for the whole, for all the pollen, because when they do it right, it's all the colors of the rainbow and not just one specific.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. So when they take and do the 1,000 hives into the cotton fields of Iowa, De La, whatever, and they just get one kind of pollen, it doesn't give them the broad spectrum of goodies they need to really sustain
what they're doing. Right, right, right.
Well, the thing is that's one thing I talked to. He won't come on air. Now, you probably understand this more than most. It's a big, I think it's like in northern, it might be northwestern New Mexico, a large bee company. I met the owner, and he was telling me all kinds of stuff about, you know, colony collapse and all kinds of problems out, and they take out 2,000 hives, and they go to pollinate, and all of a sudden the bees don't come back. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. So they're going, and I go, well, you got to come on and talk about it. He goes, no. No, heck no. And that is a verboten subject. Tell us about what the controversy is, what's going on.
Well, that's been going on since the 60s, because I used to do my migratory, and then I stopped when all the politics got going and all the dopes with the pesticides and the treatments got going, because I used to, with the government, do workshops with the BIP program, which was the bee indemnification protection program for reimbursing beekeepers for bees that were killed.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Time out. Let's start over again. All right. You're saying that in the 60s, there was a program.
It all started with the almonds with the West Coast starting to put the various treatments in the different orchards for prettier fruit like Alice in Wonderland through the looking glass. See how pretty it is, but it's so damn fake and artificial and sickly, you really don't want it.
Well, when they were doing this, it was killing bees and they were compensating you?
Yeah. Well, we were fighting them, see, because it was an indemnification program. We started getting our first big losses, and then it got into a tit-a-tay back and forth fighting, and the bigger outfits that didn't like it, some of us just backed off and said, the heck with it. The other ones said they were getting even, and it got back and forth, back and forth, back and forth to... No one really knows what's going on because they don't know the history of it, but it's just been back and forth game playing and fighting for money ever since for getting even on both sides.
So there's been a, you know, one, the beekeepers could see that now their colonies are being decimated. They got problems and issues.
Yeah, but the new ones don't really know it. And most of the older families where Dad and Grandpa started and all the stuff got going, they don't know how all the schematics came into play. Because if they were going to lose, a lot of them just went over there and decided since that was the startup, they just start splitting bees and everything and make them pay for stuff that was half the size, getting half the bees in the hell with them if they were going to put dopes on everything.
Okay, so I want to make sure I understand what the issue is. Okay, let me go ahead and phrase my question.
Okay.
There was a fight with the government that when you're allowing these industries put this stuff on the plants and it kills my bees, that I want some kind of takings or compensation, give me money?
There was a beekeeper indemnification program for reimbursement, whether it was cotton crops, almonds, citrus down in Florida, all, you know, the cotton fields all along the Mississippi and Missouri and stuff. That if the chemicals were applied wrongly, then they would get reimbursed for the dead bees. But then so much was being killed, it was like, oh, no, we didn't do that. And it got to the thing fighting back and forth. And then when they eliminated the BIP program,
yeah,
then... What happened was the beekeepers decided since they weren't getting reimbursed and they needed more money and they were going to take stuff over there, they'd start doing it a different way. So
okay, when we come back, we're going to find out the rest of the story.
Okay.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. and we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm, and Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you, and please feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the years has already happened.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we're right back. I want to get right back to D. Lusby. Now, let's go ahead and you got me interested in this. This is one thing that I want to share with the audience. The problem is, and let me emphasize this a little bit, is that without having been around to see the cycles of what happens with the government and how you get, you know, regulatory capture by companies and interest and growers and Arthur Daniel Midland, De La Monsanto, whatever, they go in and they're, oh, we got to have government regulate and do, and as soon as you create that kind of authority, all of a sudden it comes with limited liabilities, certain levels that's not pollution. Well, this part's not pollution. Yeah, but it caused all. Yeah, but we decided that this number is not pollution. You can't do pollution. No suing, no pollution. And I'm going, really? And then in the beginning, they'll go after, you know, people like yourself that are damaged by certain policies, and they'll pay off a little bit or say they did, or it's a political move, or get somebody elected one congressional 2-year term. And then all of a sudden it goes away. And nobody knows about this unless you lived it, unless you were there. And as an activist since the late 80s, 25 years I've been doing this, I've been around long enough to see these cycles in everything. You go back further to where Dee has been doing this since the 60s, and she goes, oh, you have no idea how bad it is from your experience. So what you're saying is as you went around the country and you would have beekeepers that would pollinate, you know, enormous cotton crops on the old plantations on the Mississippi River, De La in the southeast, and we're going into the orchards, California and Arizona and everything. A lot of people don't know is that Arizona, you add water, it grows. We're like number one in cotton, or used to be. Number 2, 3 in citrus. You add water, Arizona, it grows. So there's a need for bees. So I'm going, all right. Now, in this process, all of a sudden, they have all kinds of new chemicals and everything, and people, environmentalists, screaming and doing whatever. So what they did to keep you quiet and shut up is they said, we did this program. Well, this program, they go, hey, man, we need to start collecting on this program. Instead, they go, well, we didn't mean for it to be that much compensation. We're just going to stop doing it. So pick it up from there.
Well, it's a whole picture. It's a lot more than that for what they've done for killing everything off to take control of food, which means you control the planet. Because it's chemicals, what they're doing with the crops. It's the size change with the hybridization of all plants, animals, and insects. And it's the way they're teaching in the box so you can no longer think independently anymore for correcting things.
Well, define that. I mean, they're defining what the box is. Is this kind of weird? Been the Eisenhower thing? We're taken over by a scientific, technological elite that you're not allowed to know, and you only any smart people works for the service of the government, and the government's interest is not yours. I mean, you know,
well, a lot of people originally growing up were taught at home, and then they got into schools with. Here's the book you follow. This is what you have to do. You couldn't do it with any other source. And now more and more you have people going back to online over the internet schools, or you got in-home, at-home schooling again, which for a long, long time was just taken away so they could be uniformly taught across the whole nation so no one would fight from region to region.
Well, why, okay, so by doing a national one-size-fits-all, this is the truth, Allah comes from the top Department of Education, you know, standard of, and here's some money, they are able to just eliminate any understanding of what's really going on or the ability to even experiment or to share it, but with the internet.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like saying one shoe fits all, so if you can't wear the shoe, you're the hell out of luck. Bye.
Oh, so that's, but with the internet, we're able to find D. Luspy and say hello, tell us everything. So now let's go ahead and get, I think we're going to be having some more shows. Now, what happens is you are in the industry and you finally decide what? You and your husband kind of went, you know, I break with thee. We don't want to do this anymore. Did you get your cut from the government? Did you try to insulate yourself? Did you move to Tucson to get away from me? And tell me your story.
Okay, well, to be honest with you, my husband's side of the family is the sixth oldest in the nation, and we have, I still have control of the oldest bee yard in the country going back to 1921 down on Alexander Graham Bell's ranch in southern Arizona.
Whoa. So you the woman, okay. So.
And on my side of the family, where my family came from Germany by way of Canada over Niagara Falls back during the early 1900s. I'm one of the, like the fourth oldest or one of the oldest out of the European side for continuous beekeeping doing too with agriculture. And we just happened to meet on up.
Yeah, you guys hooked
and then we put both sides of the picture together because he knew the politics on this side. I knew the politics on that side. See, and my husband's family with Lusby were all State Department and governmental people from way back when.
Well, what is it that you see has we've got? I hear the term, they say, regulatory capture. And I came to understand what that meant was, is whenever you start hearing in the news a number, oh, we have so many of this happening here and that happening, this is an important number, we got to change this number. And the second you hear government and media start talking about a number, you know the next step is there's going to be some government program to alter that number.
That's
right. Here it comes. And then when you got that regulatory body to do that, well, then guess what? The very guys that are supposed to be regulated are the ones that take it over and do whatever the heck they want to the detriment of, you know, like freedom. And I'm going, okay. So the beekeeping industry, let's talk about that. We're going to
you control bees, which is the bottom rung of the food chain. You control agriculture. And agriculture, with all the old big families in this nation, is the main representatives in Washington for some reason, which means you control this country, and it's nothing but click fighting with the top 50 in this country against the top 50 in Europe or Southeast Asia, and then it just pyramids up worldwide.
So it's a food thing.
It's a food thing for control, because when you check history from the study of honeybees being the bottom rung comes all your basic construction, navigation, schooling, also all your vitamins, your minerals, which is all your pharmaceuticals, the study of propolis with it is all your natural healing when you go back to all your workshops to Egyptian times for all your cancers and your different things with your body. And you control it if so much came from it with the study of between our navigation, our building, our medical, with the propolis, the vitamins and minerals. You control food, you control with the bloom whether they can have livestock and keep the ranches and farms going with the stuff that's grown. You control the world.
Wow.
And there's a reason for controlling beekeeping.
So this was recognized by you when? In 53, 72?
All the old families growing up, it used to be common sense.
Wow. Did we find a gem? Did we get the right person? Dee Lusby. Donna, you go into today's archive, and you'll see all the links to find out what Dee knows. And she's sharing with us here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit more. Okay, Dee, let's go ahead and make a list of some stuff that we want to make sure we bring up, because we got two more segments, and I want to make sure we get the goodie in.
Okay. Well, you could cover just about anything. Chemicals is big with people right now, but they don't realize that a lot of the chemicals are the same chemicals from the 60s that were destroying things with new names. It's like you change the name like you change the medical name to keep it going, so you keep your patents going, so you keep your money flow. Then you have the different hybridization and size changing of the bees, which changes the diet, the breeding parameters, and how plants and animals live on Earth. And that is mandatory. Then you have the way stuff is taught that has changed to where it's teaching in the box. And what most people don't understand when they hear a colony collapse disorder, which is just bees dying, is that they think it's what's being sprayed on crops or what's being done. But, CCD is not caused by one factor, such as pesticides. And it's whether you're watching like a film, reading a book, an article, listening to a speaker. If they say they know what the cause is, and it's a single factor, that is BS, because even the top research institutions and bee scientists in the nation, like Yale and Rutgers and your bigger universities, Ohio State, say that CCD is most likely caused by a perfect storm of several factors, and it's all converging at the same time, put together for what's been done for manipulation of the bees, for industry control, for controlling our nations worldwide. And that is wrong, because it's a money factor for gouging money for lining pockets.
Okay, now when you say CCD, what's that?
That's the colony collapse disorder that says they use for bees dying in general. And what's so bad is that the highest concentrations of pesticides found in beehives that are killing them are now beekeeper-applied pesticides that's been taught to them for how to do by our own researchers, because they've been bought out by the grants where they're getting money for how they teach on how to put the dopes, drugs, and crap into our beehives. And that's our food chain, and you want to eat that stuff?
I prefer not. I have we have local beekeepers here that I've just I purchase. He cuts off the wax on the end of it, lets it drain on a cookie sheet into the jar. I get it done.
Uh huh.
And I'm like, okay, and that's what I go. Well, hell, I can do that. And give me a beehive.
Well, yeah.
So this, can we purchase a beehive from you? How much is that?
Well, I don't sell bees because it's just me working anymore, because my husband died in 2006 due to the stress and all the political fighting we were having with the feds and scientists and everything trying to do stuff properly. People have no idea what is going on.
Okay. Well, here's your opportunity to share. I mean, this is it.
Well, I don't mind sharing. It's just that most people don't want to hear it straightforward.
That's me. I do. Okay.
Well, we'll soon see.
You don't know me. Here we go.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
There's something happening here. What it
is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, we're going to take a looky-see. Now, you know, Dee Lusby, she's of the opinion that, you know, nobody really wants to know what's really going on. She's like, you know, she doesn't know us too well, do she? You know, so we're going to go ahead, give her an opportunity to express herself. Now, this is, let me go ahead and give you some of the issues that off the air, we're making a list of some of the things that I want to make sure we get in real quick. Chemicals are the same as in the 60s. They're just under a new name, and it's a patent thing. And they keep changing. You know, there's a little Monsanto crap and stuff, and they're getting, you know, they're buying. You know, how are you going to change life at a fundamental level and not have a fundamental change at a fundamental level, a fundamentally, you know, kind of fundamental? You know what I mean? I mean, long-term, big, giant, kids growing up in, chemical soup of, I'm like, damn. So we're going, that's why we're doing the aquaponic thing. We got, you know, we had goats, and we just got rid of our goats because we're planting a bunch more stuff. And we got like 20 chickens. We have aquaponics that we're doing, just getting the fish and the vegetables and so on. But, you know, what does that mean? I mean, it's about time for the bees. So we're going to be talking about the bees. Hybrids of bees. What kinds of bees are being done? Why? And you have this colony collapse disorder. They're just saying it may not be any one thing. It's a perfect storm of, you know, from cell towers down to genetically altered pesticide, Roundup, Monsanto, GMO, kind of whatever. Then you have the poisons that the actual beekeepers are putting in their colonies because they're being taught through BS education. Oh, well, then you need to do this and do that and, you know, fill the tray with whatever because it's going to be better, make more money, liars. And then, you know, how much is it to get a hive? And where will we go to get that? And her husband recently died in a few years ago, and she believes it's from the stress of dealing with this Fed thing, doing what? Let's start with that, your fight against the Fed, and what were you fighting, how, and what were the issues?
Okay, I've been in beekeeping since I'm 10 years old. Okay, I've done workshops since my 20s and 30s. In the 80s, when I married Ed Lusby, I ended up with a contract that I wrote that the USDA signed off on, which you don't see too much. But when I was in the military during Vietnam, and I am a Vietnam veteran, I wrote rules and regs. And so I know how to write contracts. Anyway, I wrote a contract. And we had a working agreement with the government to teach them and show them on a technical exchange of information to go after to see if we could control the mites that was becoming more and more a problem in this country. And that's when
mites,
which are ticks, which is like varroa, which is like tracheal mites, which is what all the dopes and pesticides in a beehive is about, because they keep kind of having pests to be able to put something in to keep the chemicals and the different things going, being sold.
Okay, you lost me on that one. Yeah, you know, there's something to do with mites. It has something to do with chemicals. You wanted to control the mites? You wanted
We told the government, you do not put dopes and drugs in a beehive. It kills. It breaches the immune system. In other words, it changes the in-house co-host existent parameters that have been there for millions of years, built up through the generations, which is evolution going forward, for healthy life. You do not put poisons and things into any animal or plants. Living.
I expect a good result. Okay, so while you're talking to them and working on this, the contract was for what?
Contract was a technical exchange of information, so we'd have a working agreement because my husband and his family helped build the Tucson lab along with several other labs throughout the years as the migration came west.
Okay.
And since we helped build the lab, and we used to do a lot of the bees and provide them for the major government labs, I told him when we got married that it just wasn't going to be done unless it was on paper so we could see what was being done. With me being ex-military, I wanted to know what the heck was going on. So where they had the libraries and that, I had access to for pro and con. And then what people that I knew that were with Washington and that, where I used to write rules and regs, agreed with me and just told me to, on the side, dig deeper and see what the hell's happening.
So what is it that you think was really going on?
Oh, you would. That's where the fun starts.
Well, you got about 2 minutes before the break, so give me
okay, what I found out first looking within the first 2 days was that the mites and ticks, they were starting to broadcast big time, had been known worldwide and in this country since pre-1917. It was nothing new. All the AHB stuff, it was nothing but a scam that had already been done and worked on Kelly Island back in the 60s that our government had spread around more so than anybody in the field ever would, and it was just scam after scam after scam. And then in the meantime, for showing them how to run clean, that was something we wanted. And then and how do you get those people off of the dopes and drugs and running clean so it can be taught clean for clean food, which is clean life, which is healthy family, so you don't end up sick with people in hospitals.
So there was a government effort to institute chemicals as we're going to, you know, better life through chemistry, and we're
it's like empire building. You have a job, you have a person waving a grant at you. And most of the grant, oh, here, fix this problem. Well, if you don't have problems, you don't have extra money. You just sit there bored. And a lot of them wanted workers and different things and big labs and this and that.
To what end? They were looking to take pharmaceuticals or petroleum products and just chemicalize every aspect of agriculture?
Oh, yeah, because you'd always hear in the back, oh, but there'll always be bees, like there'll always be insects or this or that or the other. Of course, that's back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and look at us now with a poisoned world and everything going downhill.
Okay, so the motivation, I still haven't got the motivation from you. The motivation for them doing this was to sell chemicals.
Was money in their pockets, grants, right. Grants and like gift money and different things. Because people don't realize they're setting donations up, they're setting foundations up. There's the old gifting way, with a lot of them still do, which is what Mo Udall told us to do, because that was the clean way.
Mo Udall was a congressman here in the 70s, 80s, right?
Oh, he was a beautiful person. Him and his family, the Udall family was great.
Okay, so now this is all of this you said, what people don't want to hear is the one thing that distilled down into the 32nd is that there were government-sponsored efforts to in every aspect of agriculture, including, of course, it had a big impact on the bees and the people started
complaining. This is when government first started really getting bought out and started the empire building where, to me, people say, oh, Monsanto Bayer or this pharmaceutical or that pharmaceutical. This is when the grant money started and people's, it was like building a home base for, it's like a money, money, money gig to show how good I am for clearing up problems, when technically the road back was undoing what physically was done to put stuff wrong in the beginning.
So the cure is going back to a healthier lifestyle without chemicals. We're going to talk with Dee some more, one more segment. Hopefully we can get some more good stories out of her to understand that what we really need to do is stop trying to fix problems, because there isn't a problem. It's called life. We just got to learn to get in balance with it, and we'll live a lot longer and healthier.
When it comes to
what you did wrong and fix that.
Okay, well, this is, yeah, we're off now. We'll be back in 4 minutes, but I want to warn you The reason people don't want to hear it, you got to say it. You got to skip to the end. You got like 8 minutes that you're going to have to be able to the last part of this show. We're going to have to do another show. Donna, go ahead and send her communication, see if we can get her scheduled again in another couple of weeks, and we'll try and get to more of these, history. I mean, just the stories, the anecdotes, I think is the most amazing thing. But you want people to hear the story, you got to tell it. I mean, I need to skip to the end because we're going to run out of time. So the thing is that I'm looking at, you want to talk about the stress that you think killed your husband, what the actual battle was?
Oh, no, you don't want that, because that was when you have your place burnt down and you've got every fire department in Tucson going to your place to try and keep you alive. It started a bunch of stress and strokes and seizures that was unreal with him. And that is a matter of documentary with video by your biggest TV stations up in Tucson. That's probably still on file back in 2000.
So you were physically attacked by the man to get you to shut up.
Let's put it this way. Within 7 days of when my husband had a fight with the head of the Tucson lab, our place burnt to the ground. We were lucky to get out alive. And we had the main industrial lot at the Palo Verde overpass, then next to all the big gas tanks and everything else, and they were afraid the whole central and industrial park there would blow up in the center of Tucson, and it was something that just sent shockwaves around everything. That's because it would have blown up a lot of the center of Tucson.
Okay. So we'll
and that's a matter of record.
Okay, no, I'll mention that real quick, and then we'll get to some of the other things. One of the things is the natural honey. We're having good luck with. I mean, a lot of things you hear this stuff, but you don't know it until you actually start trying it. A friend of mine started off simple, like an ingrown hair on his abdomen, and he's picking at it and got infected, and he had this big thing, and we were up camping. It was getting worse, and we're like, problem, we might have to go to the doctor. And this guy had this natural honey, and in 2 days it's healed it up.
He goes, I used to do workshops on all that with the holistic healing with honey and pollen and propolis, and they stop you because it's like telling them how to do medicine without a license, and they threatened to put me and my husband in jail and they stopped all our workshops.
This is the kind of stuff that we want to see. This is all right. You don't know who I am or who we are or anything. Probably a real short version is we are libertarian freedom activists. Leave us aloneism kind of for 25 years. My wife and family and friends and our audience and our website and our magazine, our newspaper, all the stuff that we do. That's what we do. And I'm the one that created the Ron Paul Lovolution logo. When Ron Paul ran for office and that revolution sign you saw everywhere, I'm the one that created that logo. So these young people, I can see, and we help them express themselves and do whatever. That's our a lot of our audience, is they need to relearn all of this stuff, and they are enthusiastically embracing it. They are starting to do sovereign living. They're living off-grid. They're growing their own food. They're teaching their kids. They're pulling them out of the government schools. They're starting to see exactly what you're talking about, and they understand, and they need you as to help the conduit to do this, and we're more than happy to start with the shops again. I mean, let's go. I got 2 acres up here. Let's do it. So that's what we're doing. Here we go.
Facebook.lrn.fm. That's Facebook.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Today's archive, which is, Friday, August 16th, right? Yep, August 16th. You go into the third hour and you'll see all these links that, she's gonna help it. Because she used to do a lot of this stuff. Let me go ahead and just, rattle off a couple things real quick because I can do it faster and get to skip to the end. The honey is a cure for a lot of stuff. I'll tell you this story. When we were at the Jackalope Freedom Festival just last week, a couple weeks ago, 4409 Shelton had been picking at, you know, he had a little cut or something on his abdomen, and it turned into a hole. I mean, it was infected. Going, I'm like, damn. So we're out camping, and it's not clean out camping, and his dirty thing kind of whatever, it got worse. And we're thinking, man, we got to go to a doctor and shot and pass to something. And one of the guys there, Dennis and Karen, they, they're you know, more mature people that, you know, been around, and they're all about tinctures and the desert plants and all this kind. They said, look, this guy is selling the natural honey over there. Just put the honey on it. Just put the honey on it, put the bandage over it, and, you know, problem solved. The next day, it closed up, started getting a lot better. The infection went down, kind of, you know, woo, and then it wasn't sticky. It just absorbed into the skin somehow, just, like, went away. And I'm going, okay. I asked Dio. She goes, yeah. We used to do classes. The government stopped our workshops. No, you're not allowed. You're practicing medicine. We're going to sue and get in that. Then her husband, you know, and all these battles going back and forth with the Fed, the lab that they helped create and start, and kind of all of a sudden there's a big dust up and everything. 7 days later, big giant fire burned them out, burned down everything. Here it come. Heck no, we don't need you, you troublemaker. So I'm going, wow, it's all about knowing the people that lived it. D, how far off am I?
Not very far.
Okay, so this is one thing that the workshops have stopped. I have no problem with you coming up and visiting with us. We'll put you up for a day or two, and you can come visit, and we'll get some hive, and you can help, and we'll do a class, and everybody learnify, and you can just spend the whole day chilling and vacationing by the pool, and you can give a class in the pool for all I care.
Well, you know? I do a yearly thing now for 7 years, but it's up at Oracle at the Triangle YMCA that I do yearly, but it's beekeepers coming in, and only beekeepers allowed to talk how to do clean beekeeping.
Well, what do I got to do to get you come up here and visit?
Well, I got to be able to get around my work schedule, since I'm the only one working 700 hives by myself trying to keep things going.
Well, what about we come down there for a visit and do some HEP? You got a big giant list of young people in there with some backhoes and stuff. I mean, you know, bring a shovel and a, you know, on a plan, and we'll go down and you share with us. We'll provide labor to you. How about that?
Well, it's going out. It's driving out to the different cattle ranches and working beehives.
Oh, my favorite thing.
You'd have to put a bee suit on.
Especially.
And drive an hour out, an hour back, and you might be out in the field 12, 14 hours.
Oh, I'll pay extra for that. If you're willing to work with us, I know a lot of people that are very sincerely would like to have this knowledge not lost. Seriously. I mean, isn't that your goal? You know, we'd like to have, you know, this knowledge not lost, and there's nothing better than spending, you know, a full day of working out and whatever. You know, you go and you're tired and you learn something, you talk around the campfire, whatever, and you go to sleep, you get back right at it. Man, we'll go out and pitch a tent and camp an RV right there by the, out in the middle of the, let's do it.
Well, it's not out there. It's just going out, and then they come back here, and they're in the office talking as we go over all the different work for 30 yards in three counties.
Done. Next. Okay, I mean, if you're willing, we'll work it out.
Whatever.
All right, let's go ahead and do it. I've done a talk to you. We'll set it up. Maybe you'll wait till it's a little bit cooler because we're wimps. But we'll go ahead and set this up. We'll make an excursion. I can probably, you tell me how big a group you want. I can get it from 4 to 40, I mean, or 400. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, so we'll work out something to do that. I do not want this information to be lost from someone. Like, if we just sit there for hours and people just ask questions, you download this information, you start giving, you know, names and dates and places and programs and chemicals and this, and you go, yeah, this thing that they're doing here, they called it, it's a third generation, a name of whatever the heck they called it back 40 years ago. You know, it's the same battle. It's just you didn't have the voice back then. You may have had a magazine. You may have had a fax, you know, tree that you would send stuff out. You had the communications with, and you go to different conferences once a year. I know how it works. I've seen this happen on industry after, you know, anything from, you know, energy efficiencies to alternative energy to food growing to livestock to beef. Everything is like this. And it kept us in the dark, and we weren't able to communicate. The internet has totally changed that, and we've embraced against it. And I want to share what you know with it. You're in freaking Arizona. It's a crime if I don't have all the people that want the very knowledge that you have and you want to share. We don't make the effort to go down and do it. We'll do, you know, whatever. We'll have, you know, masseuse come for you. Get your hair done. Give you a foot massage. Whatever it takes. Make your day a nice day. Done. Done, 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 done. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Donna's going to work it out. You do some research on me and Freedom's Phoenix, and you start to find out. You'll go, oh, these guys are serious. Yeah, we damn Skippy. We are. Now, the one thing that we're going to come across as we do this is that, you know, how forceful is your opposition and where does it come from? Is it corporations or government, or have they merged to be the same thing?
It's high international politics.
Really?
Let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, can you give me an example? You know, give me a... I mean, and the reason is what? Just population control? Population decimation? They want a collapsed hive to be the collapse of the population of human beings? I mean, you know, what's their goal? Say it.
You control bees, and I'm serious. You control bees, you control agriculture, you control food, you control the environment. You end up, this is how the world has been controlled back to Roman times, and people just, it's a lot of them, it's just above their heads as to what's being done.
What is your view on, I tell you what, have you ever even heard of aquaponics, you know, the fish and
uh-huh.
the vegetable loop? Well, we have, if you were to look it up, you know, azaquadome.com, AZ for Arizona, azaquadome.com, and you'll see what we're building here. And I'm out right now. You know, the audience hasn't seen the pictures. I just wanted you guys to know. Yesterday, I started building the shell, started sewing it, you know, and doing it kind of what, you know, it's very pretty colors because I want it to be pretty. But we're, you know, finishing this up. We got the rock in. We're starting the pumps. We're growing the bacteria that we need. We'll be adding the fish here and within days. And then we start, here come the plants. And this is a mechanism that's one reason why we need the bees. We want to make sure we get pollination because that's been a problem. There hasn't been enough insects. Is this known throughout the bee industry that we're losing that capacity to pollinate and that's a real threat, or is it just all hype? Is it a real
problem? It is worldwide, and it's been a control thing that's been growing since the 1900s, since change was started, making bigger bees and bigger and better fruits and animals that have no bearing or fitting in with nature anymore. And until nature goes back to ground zero and you come forward again, nothing's going to be fixed. It's going to get worse and worse.
Well, that's one thing we see a big, giant push for heirloom seeds, for natural, no pesticides. Yes, I lose 10% of my crop to some insects, and they're just food for the birds that get the other ones that don't kind of, well, I don't care. Because their big thing is, oh, our apple's prettier than yours. It looks like, you know,
bigger is not better. It's less, and it's more unhealthy.
Yeah, it's like Snow White.
and people just don't realize that. It's like through the looking glass looking at stuff that's going to make you sick. It might be pretty, but it don't mean squat in the real world.
Now, this is the information that I want to give you, you know, some hope and encouragement for what you've been doing. I'm glad that you've been able to survive long enough to see that it's changing. The entire world is changing. It's Generation Next, and we do a magazine, and we cover a lot of this stuff. And in our next edition, we're going to feature a bunch of you, because this is, and we want to go down, we want to be good friends, we want to, you know, suck up every bit of information that you're willing to give us, and I know a bunch of people that are in line that want to go. You'll work it out. Go ahead and stay on the line. Donna will go ahead and work it out with you, because we need... You know, what's a comfortable number? You know, how many people you can come down and get the most out? How many days do you need them? It needs to be an overnight, probably, because we're going to be coming from Phoenix down to Oracle's north of Tucson. It's kind of in between, just north of Tucson, between Phoenix and Tucson. So it's about 100 miles south. So we're willing to be good students, good labor, good effort, and make sure that you come out way ahead and meeting some good new friends that want to learn what you know. And if you're willing to do it, we'll make it an enjoyable experience for you, okay?
Well, it's good to say that it can be done and people want to do it. Well, when it comes down to doing the real work, this is where the line crosses and many walk away because they don't want to get their fingernails dirty.
No. That's not us. I mean, this is, okay, we're off air now, and we can continue this and go ahead and record it. But, I tell you what's going on. Go ahead and start it again. Go ahead and have him move. Go ahead and start another. We'll do a fourth one that goes on because I want to include this. Did he start another one? Yes, no, yes?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. So I was talking to my producer. All right. So you got to communicate with me, man, and I ain't got time to do it. So what I need to do is we'll go ahead and set up a time for us to go down there, and I'd like to get...
Now, my only problem is I'm not a normal beekeeper. I'm in international politics, which means that, for example, the 1st of September through the 15th of September, the country of Japan is paying for one of their best researchers to come over here and work with me.
Oh, no. I'm hip. Somebody that's been doing this generationally this long, I get it.
Okay, and then from the middle of September to the 1st of October, I've got a person coming in from Bulgaria, from Europe. So I'm swapping information from both sides of the world that I then put together so I know what's going on. From Japan to Taiwan to Formosa to Southeast Asia with what's going on in Bulgaria for what he knows from Germany and Russia and Europe. And then during October, I already got two people coming out of the Gulfport states that are some of the best, that work with some of the best queen breeders in this country for the behind-the-scenes stuff. And this goes on nonstop 24/7 year round, and my organics list on Yahoo that I told you about, this is question and answer daily. So when I come in from the field, I might not even go to bed till 10-11 o'clock at night.
Now, I have complete understanding. Let me tell you what we can offer and help. One, we have, a very large audience of young people that are the doers, that go out and they build their own homes. They farm their own land. They dig their own wells. They, make their own science, growing nanotubes and nickel iron batteries and going in. I mean, these are the people that they have so much understanding of this libertarian philosophy that government is not there to protect or help them, that they have totally bypassed that as a source of information.
Well, this is good, except that where I told you my husband died, where we got burned out because they wanted us stopped, Everybody that has gotten close to me from 97, 98 forward has either had families threatened, burned, businesses put out of business. I just went through 2 weeks of having all my transmission lines, my gas lines, my electrical lines on my vehicle redone that were either cut or fracked or had to be redone so I wouldn't explode my vehicle driving out in the field.
I am of the opinion...
And a lot of people do not go through this, let alone fires that are specific to where my bee yards are year after year after year because they don't want me going, and yet I'm still going fighting it.
You just need to do some research on who we are. I'm telling you, you have no idea what we do. Bring it on. And we've been doing battle with the big bad boys for a long time from a fundamental standpoint of just understanding, how to recognize who the bad guys are. And it's real simple. They always say, they this, they. They go, they who? They, them, those. And I go, let me tell you who they, them, those are. There are those that just want to be left alone, and there are those that just won't leave you alone. Which one are you? So
well, I can talk. I know I can't go into specifics by name with government because then it's a liability thing. But for how to run clean with no dopes, no chemicals, and how to clean up the hive so you can be running clean bees within 6 months or 90 days, that's not a problem. It's just that most people do not want to do the 24-hour, 7 work involved with it because it's a difference between putting a quick fix in with the dopes or changing something that then means working with the bees in tandem with your range, your temperatures, and the way agriculture is supposed to run. But if you're real ag, you need to do it so you're doing real farming.
No, I have complete understanding, and this is exactly what we want to learn and share. And we have a lot of capability through video and our magazine and newspaper and website. And, you know, if you go to... Do you have the individual ones on just the Donna? Do you have the individual stories on the Freedom's Phoenix, or are they just on the Third Hour Archive? Okay. Go ahead and send her the link. It'll take us about an hour to do the editing of the video and the audio and all that kind of stuff. Donna will send you a link so that you can see, you know, what we do and what we're about and how it's going, and we'll go ahead and get that to you. And if you do a little bit of research, you'll see that we're very sincere in this, and we have a next generation that needs, wants, desires, and willing to put forth the effort and drive down and be your labor for whatever you do. A long list of, you know, I need ditch dug here, and I'll share with, and we'll make it happen.
No, it's not that way, because I have a main thing, but and I do have two 20 by 60 foot buildings that are work buildings, but the bees are out in the hills where the work is. Other than that, I'm working out in the field. I might cut grass around my buildings, you know.
Well, I'm just offering. It's great when you got a bunch, you know, a dozen young people with strong backs willing to do some actual work.
It don't work that way with bees.
No, I understand, but I'm
just
saying. Because
you get more than two or three people in a bee yard, and it sets them off, so you get them stinging because you're in their flight path.
No, I understand. No, my point is just mow your lawn, wash your dishes. I mean, I just want to help you. You know, so we'll work on that because I know how busy someone and active, because you're an activist. And for someone like you doing this, it's a lot of work. It's a distraction. So I'm trying to counter whatever.
I'm not a housekeeper. There you've got me right, because I wasn't raised to do housework. I was raised out in the field.
Well, we want to, you know, whatever it takes for us to be able to, you know, glean. Because I think it's, you know, I'm 52, so I'm probably older than a lot of these younger guys, you know, but I'm kind of the mid between your generation and them. But I have the understanding of how important it is just having experienced and lived through a lot of this stuff. It's not like reading it in a book. It's knowing it. It's actually seeing it. It's when you look at the pollen, you can tell what's in it or not in it. When you look at the bees, you look at how they react, you look at the plants, you look at, I mean, just from the experience of just hanging out, and we have a lot of these people, some senior citizens that are retired up here in Sun City that were CEOs of this company or mechanical engineer, mm-hmm. Whatever, or a farmer of what you call it, and they're very willing to share with these young people. All I got to do is just put them together and let them sit there and drink beer for 8 hours, and all of a sudden you passed on enormous amounts of information to the very generation that you were hoping to get. I'm providing that opportunity. That's what I want to do.
Right. Well, with beekeeping, it's people that come out, like I say, that like the wine guy from Japan that's coming for 2 weeks. By the second, third, fourth, or fifth day, with hands on, sight on, seeing, it starts sinking in, because you have to know it when you open a hive by sight, by individual hive, what you're looking at. And until you've seen it for 200, 300, 400 hives day in and day out, it don't sink in what you're looking at.
I have complete understanding. And as much as you can share with us, that's why I know it's going to be more than just a day. I mean, it needs to be kind of a process, relax, weekend, camp out, kind of we'll be, and you come visit with, we'll put you up and get nice weather, kind of something. We'll work it out.
Okay.
You know, so this, I'm sincere on, we've been looking for a bee person to have half your knowledge for, God, a year.
Well, I used to do all this because I was the original, because I was the state association president for the state of Arizona, and then I got so pissed off when they started changing all the stuff along with the cattle and the cotton industry way back in the I'm the one that deregulated the Department of Ag and Hort and changed it to a Department of Agriculture in the state. I wrote the rules and regs for the cotton and the cattle industry where we worked together. But when I did it, I told them I was wiping the books off for the bee industry, so we had had freedom to keep bees, seeing what was coming with the other states trying to take full control, and I'm glad I did. We don't have any bee laws in this state.
Yay, and we want to keep it that way.
But I'm the one that did that because in the military, I'm one of the few that was taught how to wipe the books in Washington to change stuff as to how far back they need to go so they can rewrite and come forward to clean that mess up. And there's stuff you teach to very few people.
Wow. So we have no, I don't got to go, not that I was going to ask permission anyway, but I mean, you know, so in Arizona, I go get me a high, put in backyard done.
But the American Bee Federation, the Nationals, and the honey producers, I used to be on their board of directors way back when, and I watched where I helped them get going, and then they got bought out and taken over, and then the people that were running clean are no longer doing it. And that's when Mo Udall, that was one of our main reps in this state that ran for president once, he told me never to do foundations, never to do a donation type company or anything where they can have a board of directors vote you out and take what you used to own or put together and change it.
Yeah.
Just do the old gift routine, and if you do anything with teaching, do it with your own clean people. So my Oracle thing that I do the last seven years to bring it home for clean beekeeping, I refuse to let scientists come in and talk because if they're going to talk dopes and chemicals and how to put into a hive, they certainly ain't coming to an organic meeting and all of a sudden say they're clean, because you don't talk with a double tongue.
No, I'm hip. We have way more understanding of this than you realize on so many different issues. And see, what we've done is I keep referring to Generation Next. Generation Next this, Generation Next that. You know, the young people, and mainly we pulled our children. We have four kids and four grandchildren, and our four kids are like 23 to 28, around 24, 20, around in there. And that's mom's job. But what happened is that we took them out of government schools. God, and the oldest was like in third grade. I could see where this is going. I go, hell no. And so we have benefited, and our grandchildren have benefited enormously from just bypassing that toxic, you know, flow of information into their heads. And that saved our future, our life, our ability to be grandparents and enjoy ourselves, just that. So anybody says, what do you think I should do? I got to get them out of government school. But what about government school? I mean, blah, 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 blah. Anything you do, whatever, if you got them in government school, you're up against a constant deluge of crap.
That's in-the-box training. So you learn to accept anything the government teaches you as being for real, and normally that's the worst stuff you'd ever want to learn.
Well, this is what the realization is of Generation Next. These young people in 07, when Dr. Paul first... See, we have a thing every year, another thing we do called the Freedom Summit. Our next one's in February. And we've been doing it for, God, since 2001, like 3 weeks after 9/11 was our first one. And we have all the big boys. I mean, you know, a lot of the people, you probably recognize their names that we knew were going to be in the freedom movement and very influential, including Dr. Paul has spoken at three of them. And what happened was we could see that it was going to be an enormous renaissance of desire for truth and real information by the young. They're like, what the hell happened? The 70-something-year-old congressman nobody ever heard of from Texas changed the planet. And Dr. Paul cured their apathy of government. What, got all these young people involved. But I knew something as a young activist. And I said, you know, I run for office all the time, but I haven't voted since 02. I'm like, if you think voting's going to make you free, you haven't been paying attention. You know? So I'm going, you know, you see the Ron Paul revolution, and we really push that and libertarian philosophy and get the government out and deregulation, and I want to have raw milk and get Arthur Daniel Midland out of the, you know, leave me alone and all this, you know, GMO crap and blah, 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 blah. But I'm going, don't ever think it's going to be some government solution. It's cultural. It's the information like what you have that is passed on to Generation Next using the internet. And they have an interest on any subject like bees and have access to the kind of information that we accumulate and we can share and hands-on and video and people talking and inspire the very people that changed the planet that are now, what's the difference between an anarchist and a libertarian? And the answer is about two or three election cycles if you're paying attention. And these guys have been paying attention. They have abandoned any of this idea that government's going to fix it for them. They don't even want to fix the regulation. They don't want to go and get the right congressman in. They don't care. They're just looking for raw data and information, and they'll start fixing it themselves. That's where you come in. Who better to have from an understanding of decades and decades and generational understanding of a family to bring this information into the next generation that not only has the interest but the capability of sharing it with the younger people coming up with video and graphics and audio and this show and, you know, being able to live it themselves, and they process this for people to be able to – they're learning it on farms right now. Right, not later. They're doing it like we're doing with our Aquadome thing. That's why we want to bring on the bees. You're the person I've been looking for. And I'm going, okay, so let's take advantage of it as quickly as possible and show that we can be really good friends, and let's do it. I'll take the risk, and they're going to come after me, whatever. It won't be the first time. So I'm going, you know, let's rock and roll and whatnot. I'm going to have Donna talk to you now. Try and set up a time of when you think your schedule might open up. When you think that we could even contact you to start setting it up, if you need time, I don't care. I'd like to do it before the end of the year. What we try and do is we have a bunch of festivals and different things and all kinds of activities and stuff. We're busy until we get into November, because at the end, you know, this might be something you want to go to. At the last weekend in October before Thanksgiving, that's why we had to get rid of the goats, is we're planting a bunch of pumpkins out there in the fields, and we're going to have the great pumpkin thing, and we have Valley Permaculture, Urban Farms. Greg Peterson and I are good friends of the Urban Farms, the Valley Permaculture people I have on. We're doing the aquaponic thing. And right before Thanksgiving, I mean, before Halloween, we're going to have a big harvest festival on like a quarter acre that we have out here, and everybody's going to be trading and doing and, you know, having a good time. So I'm featuring the aquaponics and so on. So when we do that, then November and December, we try and take time off for friends and doing fun stuff that we want to do. That might be the time that we go out. We just got a couple days ago turkeys that were going to be first time butchering of turkeys for Thanksgiving, you know, and Christmas. You know, I got to learn that. I haven't, you know, I think I've butchered like one bird one time taught by my uncle when I was a teenager. And other than that, now I got to go be farmer. So we're learning that. We're going to share that with the audience too. So during about that time, while we're doing all that, that's where the bee thing will come in too. We need to get us a hive. So we're going to need, Donald probably contacting you, you know, another day, you know, we've got time. Maybe she'll talk to you a little bit here where we might get a hive. Who will we contact? What search terms do we need? Where would you want to get it from? We don't want to get it from here and there, because we need to get some bees out here now. So we're going to be working on that. That's why we're talking to you. So this is where we're coming from. And I think that this is a realization of what I hope that you're looking to do, is pass this information, this desire, this understanding to the next generation, and at the core of that next generation that has the capability to transmit this information via communication with the internet and videos. And I got videographers, we got other radio shows, we got other activists that want to just suck your brain dry of everything you know about bees.
Well, I used to do all that, but then when my husband died, see, I had to pick up a $500,000 mortgage. I'm down to my last $77,000, and that's why I'm working hard to get this year's crop in. And next year's, and then I'm free to go back to doing schools and workshops again, but then they don't want me doing that.
I do.
And every time that I get close down is when I'm either vandalized or I have fires or burning or something, so I'm forced to keep working.
See, this is one thing that I try to emphasize. They want to know how it is I get to do the stuff that I do and maintain and I'm still alive kind of stuff.
Well, see, all through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I could do what I wanted, but I had no mortgage until my husband died. I could, you know what I mean?
No, I have complete understanding. And I'm just, I hopefully we can help. See, my thing is that if you're going to be on a list, be on top of the list. It's safer there. So that's, you know, why I'm so open about a lot of the stuff that we do is because if I'm not, you know, we get the same treatment you do.
I'm trying to get my crop in now, and it's work. It's right now. I'm ending up what came in with the range July 1st. I'm taking honey. Then I've got to go around.
Do you need help?
Well, I got the guys coming in from Japan and Germany, so I've got plenty of help for September. But then for fall flow, once I'm at a certain point, I sit and wait for the first killer frost, and then I extract, which could be from Thanksgiving in through the end of January. But while I'm waiting for the last killer frost, even though I'll go to yard at a lesser pace, then I'm doing more maintenance-type work, which is something a lot of people don't see because I'm repairing boxes, wiring, making foundation, which is something nobody teaches in this country for how to be self-sufficient.
See, all this is stuff we need to know. I mean, there may be, you know, a couple of trips we need to make and document. You know, we have some of the guys that do, they make their living on videos, doing YouTubes.
There's no one that's wanted to do a full school series on it because with the politics, everyone that tried very seriously, either their families were threatened, kids hurt, or they were burnt out of business. And I know at least four major companies that were burnt to the ground.
Yeah, you know, these are individual activists that got 70,000 subscribers to their whatever. They send a video out, 70,000 people. They want to take them out, they got to take out 70,000 of their closest friends. You know what I mean?
But if they want to do a whole series on how to do it, there's spring workup, then there's maintaining through your active season, you know, for your main flow, what they call it, May, June, July. Then there's your phase down where you're taking the honey that came in and getting your refills. Then there's your fall workups. There's how to do the brood nest turnovers when they go from long-lived bees to short-lived bees, from short-lived bees to long-lived bees. Then there's how to see the difference between a strong hive of a weak hive, how to make your nukes.
Hey, it sounds like we need a class on what classes we need.
Well, it's not as simple as different people think. It's an ongoing process.
No, I understand this. My thing is that, let me tell you how the process starts, us starting it. Everything, all this stuff, well, then you have to. I go, you know what? It starts with us going down there and stay overnight and you telling all of these people that are interested in what you just told me. That's how it starts.
Once you see the field, people that have been here that are serious for two or three days, like when Osterlin came over, Eric Osterlin that worked with Brother Adam, he freaked out and he was back seven times and he still hasn't seen it all.
I have complete understanding. Don't think we've been doing, like, you know, doing aquaponics is not, you know, I just, you know, plug and play, especially when you're, you know, customizing it and developing it and using a waterfall feature for the pond that we have with the plumbing that goes over in a geodesic dome that we created to build the blah, 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 blah. I mean, you know, we got skills. We're ready to rock and roll.
I mean, there is so much that's linked with bees that's been covered up. It's unreal. See, and most people don't realize the building of the pyramids was done by the study of the bees because the bottom of the hexagon cells that the bees built are all rhomboid pyramid shapes that they were copying.
You know, this is... Yeah, see, I really look forward to spending time with you. Let me go ahead and get Donna on, and we'll start setting out some kind of times, at least your schedule when we should contact you again, or maybe a weekend that we can plan. But what I really need is a limitation on the size of the people, because whatever you give me, I max out that many people.
Well, when I do my conferences and I haven't done workshops too much, because like I say, when Ed died, I had to pick it up, but I'm down to my last... If I can get the crop in between now and December, where they're coming in from Japan and Bulgaria to help me set up for fall since we had decent rains. Hey, once I'm under $30,000 where I had a $500,000 they thought I'd never pay off, they were rid of me, I'm coming up fighting. That's like the phoenix coming up out of the ground. You ain't going to want to know me.
You mean like Freedom's Phoenix?
Let's put it this.
I'm with you. Okay, here, Donna, go ahead and here, wait for just a second for Donna. We'll try and set up a schedule because, you know, I like you, we're busy doing stuff. I need to get a weekend.
Well, I don't mind a schedule so much because I do my own timetable because I'm my own work person. It's just that when I've got certain people coming in with the country's paying for them coming, then I got to be, like I say, September is pretty much off.
Okay,
other than that, I'm pretty much free to schedule and go as I go as long as I stay on top of my field work.
All right. Well, what are we going to do to help? All right. Here, I'm going to put you on hold, and Donna's going to go ahead and get with you, and we'll see when we can do it. Hold on just a second.